Well, good morning. Today is Tuesday, April 28th, 2015. This is a regular meeting of the Los Angeles Board of Police Commissioners. Before we call the roll, let's open this meeting, recognizing the horrific situation in Nepal, remembering the victims, praying for their families, thanking the responders and aid givers from all over the world who are trying to get there to help. And at the same time, let's hope for the immediate return to order in Baltimore so that any and every discussion from every vantage point can be held in a productive manner that will lead to a better nation for all of us. Madam Secretary.
Good morning. Let the record reflect Commissioner Soboroff, Madison, Figueroa Villa, and Saltzman are present, and we have a quorum. Number one on the agenda, commission comments.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Good morning. I just have one. I just want to let my colleagues know that I attended, and Commissioner Figueroa Villa also attended two events last week, which were significant, quite enjoyable. One was in celebration of the promotion of Chief B. Grimala, and was held in Hollywood, where she had been captain. It was a wonderful event, very well attended by the community, the department, and I appreciate being able to be involved in that. There also, and others I believe were there, including Commissioner Figueroa Villa, is the event honoring the retirement of Chief Sandy Joe MacArthur out front here, a lovely, fun, informal event, and I was pleased to be involved in that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And to add to that, I feel like I was at parties all week. I also attended Assistant Chief Villegas's promotion party. It was held at City Club, and it was very heartfelt, and I was honored that they gave me a couple of minutes to talk about what that means to us in the community. So congrats to all, and I think the retirements really showed me what it takes and how they spoke about the history in the department to be a police officer, I'm really happy about the new promotions at LAPD. You worked hard to get there, so Chief Villegas, congrats.
I also want to ask Chief Villegas how it felt to sit in the top seat here for, I think it was about 25 seconds, which sort of makes me feel good because I lasted at the Dodgers for one full day, and he only had 25 seconds up here, but I want to congratulate him also. Let's move forward.
We have one public comment card, Mr. Herman.
I'm going to ask today when we have multiple cards that we ask the people to line up so we don't have the shenanigans of delaying.
Test. Great. Mic works fine. I just want to remind you, Mr. Soboroff, that bad news in Baltimore can be a situation related to Los Angeles. But our fine officers in the blue are now with their video cameras and multiple cameras throughout the city that are videotaping all of us, and I'm glad to see that. But I find it uncomprehensive that you have officers today wearing body cameras, such as mine here. See this one? It works very good. Test. Yes, works very good. And I'm reminding you that censorship to evidence on cameras should be open to the public, that we have every right to view what is going on in our communities. The quality of life cannot be hindered by your bad suggestions of, we'll let the courts decide. Should we wait that long, any of you? No, we should not. So again, we catch you in the act of not representing the public's interest. I hold you contemptuous to your action if you don't allow the public to know what's going on in these video cameras. We killed Africa. We killed other minorities. We let out a gentleman from jail after 17 years. And next, I'm probably going to become the next casualty of the bad reaction of Charlie Beck not securing my safety in the city of Los Angeles because I am so elegantly speaking. And I find it scornful that you don't take to our attention to the problems of what's going on. Right, Mr. Beck? So please, hold the integrity of the law for us all as integrity in all we say and do. I give you back 1 second, Mr. Speaker.
Number two on the agenda, the report of the Chief of Police.
Morning, Chief.
Chief Beck.
Good morning, Commissioners. A couple of items I want to discuss before I get into my normal discussion about crime statistics. First, considerable attention has been paid to the change in our patrol configuration and my mandate of two-person cars, and also the appearance of all our employees in uniform. Some of this has been was attributed to the blue threat that was put out by Baltimore, but I would remind the public and the commission that this weekend ISIL initiated a call for those followers that it has embedded across the world to attack those in uniform, including law enforcement and police officers. You add that to the incidents in Boston and my desire to be able to respond to anything that would occur similarly in Los Angeles, and this is the configuration that we'll keep for the duration, although I evaluate it every day, and we make a decision based on that evaluation as to whether or not it will change. This morning I attended the LINCT conference at Universal Studios. It is the Leadership in Counterterrorism Conference. It's the fifth annual such event. It's a combination of counterterrorism folks from not only the United States, but from Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and from Canada. There were about 300 participants there. The keynote speaker was Jim Comey, the director from the FBI. It is an event where we bring together all the practitioners to talk about the state of counterterrorism throughout the English-speaking world, and also our preparations and the things that we need to do to keep our various communities safe. It's a very important piece of our counterterrorism strategy, and they'll be meeting for the next couple of days. So it is a very positive aspect, and it's one that has been hosted by the Los Angeles Police Department for the last 5 years. Moving on to crime statistics, we continue to show a decrease in homicides compared to last year, about 8.6%. The other four categories of violent crime are up in a total of about 26%. Property crime is also up in all four categories, led by an increase in burglaries from over last year of 21%. And at the low end of the increase is personal theft other, which is at a 1.8% increase. That's a total combined Part 1 crime increase of 14.2%. Much of this is, especially on the violent crime side, has been affected by an increase in gang-related activity. Gang crime, particularly violent assaults, are up 27.6% year-to-date. Number of victims shot in the city of Los Angeles are up 27%. I know there's a considerable discussion about the nature of the crime increase compared to last year, and most of it is easily attributable to an increase in gang violence. The Office of Operations, assisted by the rest of the department, is vigorously trying to control this, and we're working with the GRID office and all our other partners throughout the community to get a handle on why we're having so many young men shoot each other over the last 3 months. Traffic collisions in total are up about 12% in the city. Serious traffic accidents, those involving death or injury, are down 11%. Hit and runs are up about 6.3%, and serious injury hit and runs are up 32%. motor vehicle versus pedestrian accidents are down in the city, and serious motor vehicle versus pedestrian accidents are down 7.8%. Bicycle-involved accidents are also down in the city of Los Angeles. We have 9,888 sworn personnel on payroll and 36 recruits in the academy. It gives us a total of just over 9,900 active Los Angeles police officers. We have 2,712 civilian personnel and 250, just over 400 reserve officers, 371 specialist volunteers, 62 counselors, chaplain counselors, and 6,081 cadets. And that concludes my report.
We have one public comment card. Mr. Herman.
I've become very scornful at the fact that we're not safe in Los Angeles. You've heard the police report. Many of you have seen it personally on the streets. The city of Los Angeles is out of control, Mr. Charlie Beck. And I have become the next victim of death. We cannot secure our families, our homes, if you do not protect us. So I, the father of death, have come to speak on behalf of Mr. Herman and the public for public interest as I voice out to you on my public comment card, The Voice, advocating that our safety is jeopardized if you don't continue to provide us the quality of protection that we all deserve, equality. I feel threatened, Mr. Beck. Although I'm dead, I feel threatened. I can't be killed, but I want to die because the world is an awful place to live.
Is that the bell?
No, sir. I got 46 seconds, Mr. Sobroff. Don't be upset. You'll have to enjoy the treatment. Scrutiny. As I scrutinize you, I plan to make you better in public interest. That's the reason why I've come to reserve the law on your behalf, commissioners. So let us not go in the wrong direction. We are not safe in Los Angeles. Many people are being injured and killed. Violence is out of control. We had our mini riot just last night. We had a tanker blow up on the 710 freeway. What really is happening in the city of Los Angeles and the county of Los Angeles?
That's the longest 2 minutes. Next.
Item number 3 on the agenda is the report of the executive director, Mr. Tiefenk.
Mr. President, members of the commission, just one very brief item, a reminder to the community of the commission's next community event, which will be on Thursday, May 28th, 2015, at the Shepherd of the Hills Church, 19700 Rinaldi in Porter Ranch. And that concludes my report.
We have no public comment cards. Item number 4 on the agenda, the report of the Inspector General, Mr. Bustamante.
Thank you, Commissioners. I have nothing today.
We have one public comment card, Mr. Herman.
I would sing for you, but my voice is a little harsh this morning. I just want to say that, Mr. Bustamante, I'm sure you're protecting us as an inspector general, correct? That you're following through with every investigation that was not possibly recorded or videoed? Because that's the subject we're all here for. We want no censorship to any cameras. We deserve to see and know what's happening in our communities and reserve that right under the Brown Act. Not to be censored, or have our civil rights violated by anyone in particular here not to address the real issues, and that is our safety. So if we're going to pay for cameras as taxpayers, the rate taxpayers, we demand that those cameras be offered for viewing of the media, and more so to the public when we go into court if you're going to take action of abusing us and possibly shooting us in the back. Not that we're a threat. It's just that we have a way of taking an approach that is more meaningful. Yes, there are incidents where people protest negatively. There are people who pull out permits and do an orderly march. That is welcome. And to the family in Baltimore, my deepest sympathy for you, although I represent death today, for the thousands of hit and runs in Los Angeles, to the victims of racist assaults and battery in the city of Los Angeles that go unreported for fear of retaliation by Charlie Chief Beck, who takes his time to investigate. I hold you, Peppa Pig, Paul Koretz, for that assault on me at City Hall, accountable. Investigate, Mr. Inspector General.
Item number 5 consists of information items and file items relative to noise variances and special event permits submitted for the period ending April 24, 2015. Item number 6, presentations. Do we have any presentations?
None today.
Item number 7 is consent agenda items. These items are considered to be routine and non-controversial, upon which time the board is provided with adequate information for approval without inquiry or discussion. Would a commissioner wish to pull an item as special for discussion from items 7A through 7E?
I move approval of items 7A through 7E.
I'll second with thanks to the donors. All in favor?
Aye.
We are now on item number 8, regular agenda item. Would a commissioner wish to pull an item as special for discussion for items 8B through 8E? We have public comment cards on 8B.
So B. In addition to 8B, I think we should discuss item 8C.
Yeah.
I move approval of items 8D and 8E.
Do we have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Good. Thank you, Rob.
Item number 8A is verbal presentation. An update from Commanding Officer and Community Police Advisory Board Representative regarding community initiative problem-solving crime strategies and other programs and goals within the 77th Street area.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
My name is Corey Palka. I'm the Area Commanding Officer at 77th Street. With me this morning is my CPAP partner, Gwendolyn Wood. Brief presentation on the status of our CPAP relationship. I brought one photo today. The photo behind you or in front of your panels is very descriptive of the partnership, the relationship, trust, peace that we strive to achieve in 77th Street in South Los Angeles. This photo was last week when we conducted a roll call in the streets at Slauson, Vermont. And Gwen, my partner here, was in attendance. And you can see the relationship she shares that the CPAP board shares. The CPAP board is very diverse at 77th Street. And this photo was taken on the heels of a coffee with the cops that we had 2 hours earlier that Gwen and CPAP members had attended. It's just illustrative of the partnership I share with her. This weekend, Gwen and I spent the weekend together. We did 2 peace marches. One of the goals of the CPAP board was to get out in the community and strive for peace with the officers. And at Harvard Park, Gwen was there. We had a Florence and Normandy 23rd anniversary of the unrest. Gwen and her team were there as well.
Can you talk about what Coffee with the Cop is? I know that they're doing them at Starbucks and some of the McDonald's. Tell me exactly what it is.
Coffee with the Cops is an opportunity for the community and the police officers to share a cup of coffee and have dialogue about issues in our community. It's an opportunity for to have real discussion on issues that are positive and tell us when we're doing good, and it's an opportunity for the people to say, well, we're missing the mark, and for us to follow up on that information. But most importantly, it's about building relationships, it's about building trust, and it's so important for the public to see us sharing a cup of coffee and doing the normal things that we all do in life in lieu of responding to police incidents. So we've had tremendous success with it, and under my direction, we will continue to do it in 77th Street. So I want to introduce you to Gwen, have Gwen make a few comments, and say hello.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Welcome. Thanks for your time.
Today, I can report that we have met our goals for last year on outreach because we're getting new members monthly. We're losing members due to, you know, age and everything, which, you know, thank God they were able to stay with us as long as they could. But we're actually getting new members, which has been a goal of ours for a while. And so they're younger. So right now we have roughly about 33 new members, and we have three that's in the process of becoming members. So, and they're young, and that's a plus for us, is that they're younger people instead of being over 50. We have some that are now under 50, which is the big plus in the community because we need that influence. We also
notice you're looking at the commission.
I'm over 50 as well, Gwen.
I am too. But, you know, in the community-wise, you do need that outreach. And so we actually have one person a couple of people that's in their 20s, and to me that's a plus because we need that influence. We need that comment. We need them to tell us, well, you know, no, this isn't the way we're thinking, you know, because older people think one way and the younger people think another. And that's a plus for our new captain here who's never been in our area working. So this is his first time in South LA. And so now he gets that diverse group of ideas and comments. And, you know, he's not just seeing one idea. He's not seeing just the views of the older people. He gets that chance of seeing the views, you know, hearing those views of everyone. And that's what the Coffee with Cops is doing for us. Because when they go out there, people are saying, well, why are they out here? You know, they're looking, and as they're coming in, like this last one, it was busy because everybody was coming in for breakfast. And so, you know, they were saying, well, why are they out there? And we could tell them, go out there and introduce yourself, have a comment. You know, if you like to tell them about something, this is your chance to do it. And this, it was really great. Even in front of Kmart's, there were actually people driving by and saying, thank you. So to me, that's a plus in the fact that they're out there and they're being seen. And with this particular picture was just before the roll call started, and there was, people were just driving by. Oh my God, oh my God. But then when we were telling them what was going on, they're like, okay. But the thing is, we're trying to make sure, our board is really trying to make sure that the captain will be educated, not just on the good part, but on what we think is bad. What we think is having a negative influence on the community. We want him to, you know, see the challenge of it. The one we did kind of hit him really hard, and everybody in the country is hitting everybody hard about Ferguson. And so he had that view of what the community at large thought, because that particular meeting, we had a large open meeting, because all our meetings, just so you know, are very open, and I think that's a plus also for them, because the people get to meet him at that moment and have a chance to have that dialogue.
What was the takeaway from that? In other words, if people went in and they're talking about Ferguson and
With Ferguson, the concern is What kind of training is the police given for those kind of, you know, one-on-one conflict? You know, what do the officers, what are they told to think first, or how are they told to react? Because a lot of people still feel that the gun should be the very last thing, and why was he shooting to kill? Because that is a big issue in our community. Why is it seems like they're shooting to kill, and why couldn't they shoot him in the leg, or why didn't he just let him walk away?
And what was the takeaway? So I understand the frustration.
The takeaway was technically that some of us felt that being in that situation, what would we tried to put ourselves in that situation. And some of us felt that we probably would have done the same thing, you know? But then there were some of us who felt that, oh, no, we wouldn't have even you know, that we would have just let the person walk away. And then there was the in-between, that conflict. So he gets to hear not just the pros, he's hearing the cons, and he's hearing those people that are in between, the people who can't decide. And the other thing is, we all came to the conclusion that officers are human. And so at that moment, his mental state personally could have affected him. And so that's the key. And the question is, when you see officers, this is one of the things that came up. Was that officer having a bad time? Did someone in the station notice? You know, we kind of feel that maybe some of the officers are exhibiting, you know, some type of tendencies to be not so nice with the community, you know, that they're a little bit more aggressive than they need to be. And so what do you guys have in place for retraining? Do you have that psychologist? My thing is, do you have a psychologist on site? Do you have it where he can go and say, you know what, I need to talk to someone about, you know, my mental state at this point? What do you have for downtown? But the retraining end of community relations, that's what we're addressing. That's why we want the officers. This right here was good because the community could see the officers that patrol their area. And so that's what we're trying to get. We're trying to get it where the people and the police are not two separate units so far apart that the only time they come together is at a conflict. We want them to understand that we're human, they're human, and we need to work together. But we also would like to know that you guys are doing your best to be able to identify officers that may have problems and work with them.
And as the Captain 77th Street, we will continue to have this dialogue. We'll continue to share the relationship, yes, that Gwen and I share. And we have another slew of weekend events calendared. And we look forward to the continued partnership and growth. And we're glad to be here this morning.
In fact, this Saturday, he will be at my neighborhood council's breakfast at 9:30. And then we have a 3 o'clock march for against sex trafficking. So he's going to be busy this weekend, too.
And, of course, we have the Chiefs basketball tip-off.
And that, too. So we're going to be busy. But hopefully our goal we have met as far as outreach, because we continually to outreach. And our board members are in various community groups. So that's our outreach, is that we're going back to the different other community groups we belong to and sharing the information and getting back feedback. Because we get back information that we have to tell him. And the incident, even now with Baltimore, it has people concerned, and we just want to, you know, make sure that you're safe and we're safe.
Comments? Questions? I just want to thank you.
And thank you very
much.
The
communication that you are enabling is important, not just to 77th, but to the entire department and to law enforcement generally. And yes, it's much appreciated and needs to be duplicated. Yeah.
So when you ask the cops or captain those questions, are you happy with their responses? Or what is, are you, you know, what is the...
You know, we, and I'll give you a broad variety of our board members. We have those who are on the far left, and we have those who are on the far right. Yeah. So technically, we had a very good mix of no, you're wrong, yes, you're right. And that's technically, that particular night, that's what they left with. We had those who were not satisfied because they feel that the police is not doing enough to train. They're saying that they're not providing the training where the officer can go out and know how to address the issue that's, you know, conflict. Well, could you, didn't you know that he wasn't ready to be out there? So see, that's the thing, that you have that issue, because it's like you've seen your kid somewhere and he's not ready to be there. He's gonna flutter and stutter and panic. And so they feel sometimes that the police are panicking. So the big question was, what kind of training do they get for that type of situation in the academy? You know, what scenarios do you create for them to go through where you can kind of see, oh, maybe we need to work with this officer, put him in this group so we can work with, you know, he may have his response time maybe too fast, because that's what in some cases we're thinking, that it's too fast, that maybe he's prejudging. And that's another thing, is what are they coming into the police? What mental state are they coming in as far as race relations, as far as area? Because it's not always about race. It is area. Sometimes people say, oh, well, like South LA. When you say South Central, then people think another way. So now they're saying, what are you guys doing to say, okay, you're going to go and work in South Central LA? Well, is that officer saying to himself, oh, wow, look what I'm going into? So we had a good mix that night, and it couldn't be resolved because at this level, all he can do is say what, you know, is basically for his station.
But we're listening, it sounds like. Thank you.
We really do want him to know, and so that helps him know how to address his office.
And that's my question to the captain. Do you see this as just a time when people are venting and it's healthy to let them vent, or are you learning from this?
Well, both. I mean, we do learn. Sometimes the conflict is necessary, and the conflict is healthy to hear what people in our community have to say and to introduce them to some of the training components. We have orientation for all new employees at 77th Street, where we bring the training coordinator in. We're going to introduce some of the techniques regarding officer-involved shootings in a simulator to our CPAP board in the future. So it's very healthy on all aspects. So I encourage it. It's good to have that discussion. And you know, she's a great partner, and we work through it, and I think that's where we'll get some progress and results because of the difficult conversations.
Great.
And it's good for everyone, actually, for us and for the police officers. And that particular day, it was very good because people were actually coming by and, you know, saying thank you and waving. So that was a plus. In this particular area, well, that was
Slauson, Vermont.
Slauson and Vermont for that week was the high crime statistic area.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Captain.
We have two public comment cards, Mr. Todd Hayes and Mr. Herman.
Herman, will you please go and just stand behind him, save us some time? Thank you. Morning, Mr. Hayes, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
77th is one of our few lockups. I got a letter indicating that no one asked to vote while they were confined in the jails. Well, really, should they have to ask? Should they have to make a request? Should they beg to have the liberty to vote? So I'm wondering whether 77 is going to be set up to allow inmates to vote. Understand, if you're not in prison, penitentiary, I guess, or on parole, you can vote, even though you are in jail, even though you are convicted of a misdemeanor. So that was disturbing to hear the police respond, department respond by saying, nobody asked us if they could vote. There's a huge campaign to get out to vote. Our mayor was elected with 12% of the voting population voting. So that's very important. The other thing is, 77th was one of the divisions where they had no rights that you have when you're locked up, like making the phone calls to an attorney, to bail bondsman, or a family member. That was not posted, even though not posting it, A51.5 Penal Code, is a misdemeanor on the part of the officer who fails to post. So I would suggest that 77th be alerted. They have an election coming up shortly, and I'm going to confer with the registrar to find out what they do to make sure the materials are available for the department, available for the inmates during the time voting takes place. Now, normally, no one's confined to a jail more than, 3 days? So there's a window of opportunity, at least of 3 days, to provide that information. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Herman?
It's a great
conversation on the 77th Street roll call, and the Madam Speaker brought up some very good points for us to understand that even officers can have a bad day, but you should learn to stay home on a bad day, like I do, constantly. There's no reason to have a gun or a taser and to go out with a malicious vindictive because you're so caught up with being upset that you take it out on an innocent civilian in our streets of Los Angeles and the Golden State of California. So the law applies not just to civilian, but it applies to those who enforce the law, Mr. Soboroff. And to Eric Garcetti, the mayor, who is now listening, join the club. Will not continue with lawlessness in the city of Los Angeles. We're not going backwards, Eric Garcetti. I don't know who holds your hand and says that you can just allow this to happen. You seem more interested in not promoting safety to the public's interests. I am here on behalf of that as a representative of death. So, Mr. Mayor, I hold you accountable. And if in my lifetime that is short, that if anything happens to me, I hold you accountable, Eric. You and your crony friends from City Hall who always threaten civilians for our advocacy and our protests that is reasonable and not unreasonable. So you can continue to put your hands on me, Sergeant of Arms, Mr. Duarte.
Hey, stay on topic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Again, what further note?
We are now on item 8B, Department's report dated April 23, 2015, relative to the responsibilities and procedures for the use and deployment of body-worn video for department personnel.
Come on up. So do you want to identify yourselves before we get started?
Certainly. Good morning, Commissioners. Arif Ali Khan, the Director of the Office of Constitutional Policing and Policy.
I'm George Villegas, Director of Office of Operations.
Maggie Goodrich, Chief Information Officer.
Dan Gomez, Information Technology Bureau.
Great. I'd like to begin by having our Inspector General, Alex Bustamante, provide his perspective on the proposed body-worn video procedures special order. Inspector General?
Thank you, Commissioner. You had asked me to be involved in this process when it first got started to give my perspective and the office's perspective on oversight and how to strengthen this policy. And we've had many communications with the community at large, civil rights organizations, the department, and the Police Protective League. So when I read the policy and the one that's proposed to you, there's a couple of things that strike me as being very important, at least from my perspective. And the one that is the most important for me is the officers turning the videos on at the earliest possible point and keeping it on throughout the entire event. I think that's the single biggest item in that draft, the draft policy that's going to impact investigations, impact the reviews of categorical uses of force. I've been actively, as the Commission's aware, been looking at digital in-car video systems for several years. And with the introduction of the body worn, and we have plans to increase our review of a lot of these, a lot of the provisions within this draft policy to make sure that they are operating the way that the Commission wants it. And we look into some of the areas that are defined in here and need to be applied to make sure that the application is in a principled way and reflects what the Commission wants. If I find any concerns, I'll bring them to the Commission's attention and write a public report immediately outlining these issues so that the Commission can revisit the existing policy. But as I said, the most important feature of this new policy is that requirement that officers initiate, turn on the videos and initiate before they initiate any investigation or enforcement activity. In my position, quite simply, I want the videos on and I want them on at the soonest possible point because that's the only way that I'm going to have an additional piece of information that I can use in evaluating uses of force, evaluating complaints, to make sure that I know what the officer's doing and what the community's doing, and be able to give you the benefit of my independent assessment. So although this policy is negotiated between the league and the department, and has a lot of different community members involved in it with different perspective, my single biggest perspective is I need the video so I can have one more tool at my disposal to properly evaluate the department's actions and the community's actions. And I'm in favor of the proposed policy.
What kind of arrows are in your quiver or tools in your tool chest if asked by this commission to monitor the policy in its early stages and report back to us? What is the maximum that you can do so we can on an independent basis? I'm sure the department's going to be doing the same thing, but what can we authorize you to do, and what resources do you have to do that?
I can examine every bit of this policy and how it's actually being applied by the department. I can look at every area to see how they're implementing it, and if I think there's a better way to do that, and bring it to your attention. Some of the issues, for example, viewing it and the discretion FID may have on allowing them to view additional videos, I'll be able to examine that and determine if that's actually being done in a principled way, or if I see shortcomings in that policy or that process, and bring them to your attention. Some of the issues with when someone may be able to turn the video off for investigative reasons, I'll be able to examine all of those and determine whether that's really truly an exception for the rare situation that presents itself, or whether it's actually being used in a way that covers up or cloaks other items that should have been recorded. So I have the ability to look at absolutely every part of this. As you're aware, Commissioner, I can look at every document, every video. I can go and conduct interviews on this. So I can dedicate whatever resources the Commission wants me to ensure that this is being implemented in a reasonable manner, and that any indication that there are problems are being brought to you. So that can be audits, that can be inspections, that can be an overall investigation. We can do a top-to-bottom review and report back to you in 6 months what our assessment is on the policy. It's really dependent upon what resources and what your requirements are. If you want us to look at this and look at it in a very meaningful way, I'll dedicate whatever resources necessary to give you the fullest picture possible.
Thanks. Before we begin, any questions of the Inspector General? Mr. Saltzman?
Thank you. I was just going to ask about a schedule, and I heard you say a six-month review, and at least my own view, I believe Commissioner Kim shares that view, that at a minimum we should hear back from you at the end of 6 months with as much evaluation of the implementation of the policy as possible.
And if I can clarify just the 6 months, we'll be looking at the item constantly. And we'll be looking at them in individual cases. We'll be looking at them as a process. And so I anticipate that I'll be having conversations with the commissioners as this is being rolled out from a policy into the implementation phase. And then on top of that, we'll have a more fulsome report with all the things we were able to determine. I believe every 6 months, a public report that the community will be able to see all of the findings of the Inspector General's office, and that the commission will have, I would hope, the information necessary to evaluate the policy and, if necessary, reevaluate it.
So if I understand you correctly, we will hear from you in public with a public report no later than 6 months, and we may well hear from you sooner than that with information that you think we should see sooner than that.
That is correct, sir.
Thank you.
Yes.
I didn't really get what you said about the in-car video policy.
When it comes to the section in the policy dealing with the officer's ability to review their video before they make a statement, that was a continuation in large part of the digital in-car video that several years ago, under the consent decree, the department and the commission had put forth that policy, in which it gave officers the ability to review their video before they made a statement. So to the extent that it's in the current policy, it's largely for continuity purposes based upon what was passed during the consent decree.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Given the existing policy regarding the in-car videos, did you detect any concerns about having the officers have the access to the film in order before they write their reports or make statements?
I didn't see anything that presented a large-scale issue on that. I mean, in the digital in-car video report, if you recall, ma'am, there were a lot of concerns that we had brought forth that the department immediately fixed involving some of the tactics issues. And again, the biggest part was tackling the issue of when the digital in-car video was turned on. So they were very serious about looking at that in the digital in-car video policy. And obviously from the proposed policy in front of you, it's front and center as a requirement. And they've gone beyond what I had asked for, which was for pedestrian and vehicle stops, and there's a whole range of investigative items that are also included in there for the turning on of the video. So we had brought front and center a lot of the issues. That wasn't one of them, but that doesn't mean that we're not looking for it or that's not going to be high on our list of things that we examine. So the commission's aware, when we look at digital in-car video, when we'll look at body-worn video, we look for any issues, whether it's an administrative issue, whether it's, like I said, some clerical problem, or if there's a constitutional issue. So we don't confine ourselves to certain items. We're going to look at the entire system top to bottom, and to the extent that an issue presents itself, regardless of the nature, we will bring forward that in a public report so that the commission has the ability to see it, so the public has the ability to see it, and that there can be discourse on it.
As we transition to the department, I want to end your this portion by thanking you, Inspector General, and then thanking each of you who are sitting up here for being involved in what's been a very long and open process. It has involved white papers from around the country and around the world. It involves studies from around the country and around the world. It has involved information from places like the Department of Justice. It has involved surveys from Angelenos. It has involved calls from Angelenos. It has involved public meetings. It has involved numerous opportunities for the public to engage right here. And all of you have been to every meeting. And I want to thank all of you and also thank the Inspector General for all of the work that you've put into to this process, because it's not just important for us, it's important for all departments, and especially big city departments that are about to embark on what we hope to embark on. We'll turn over the...
Thank you, Commissioner. Once again, R. Folly Khan, Director of the Office of Constitutional Policing and Policy. With the Commission's permission, what I'd like to do is just provide the context and how the proposed order was developed and something for your consideration as we go forward. Subsequent to that, happy to take questions, and then Chief Vegas, Ms. Goodrich, and Sergeant Gomez are here to respond to any questions regarding operations or the technical aspects of this. As you know, the Los Angeles Police Department has been committed to the use of digital evidence to evaluate public officer encounters ever since digital in-car video was supported by Mayor Villaraigosa. And the police department is part of the consent decree. Chief Beck was instrumental in developing that and ultimately having it deployed while he was the chief of police in 2010. This was important to do because we realized that it would have very powerful capabilities to record car stops, to a limited extent pedestrian stops, vehicle pursuits, and of course transporting individuals in the rear seat of the police car, and found that this would be something that would help in the prosecution of criminal suspects, help resolve frivolous complaints, reduce liability from civil litigation, promote accountability, and also provide additional evidence for the department and the commission to evaluate to determine whether uses of force, other tactics, and other policies were complied with, and it constantly used that to improve the department, which is all proven true in our experience in Operation South Bureau, where a digital in-car video is deployed in all black and white police cars. Body-worn video is also something that the department has been ahead of, as we all know through the leadership of Commissioner Soboroff and the Commission, Chief Beck, and others, where well over a year ago, it was seen as the next step in how we can use this valuable evidence to do the same things that we're hoping to do and do currently with digital in-car video. And then, of course, the mayor supporting the purchase of 7,000 on-body video cameras and actually putting approximately $4,500 or the funding for $4,500 in his budget that is pending before the City Council.
$4.5 million.
No, 4,500 cameras.
Oh, 4,500
as the
cameras.
First part of it, yet with $4.5 million.
Which also leverages our potential to get money from the president in his in their program.
Yes, we have grants pending, and I believe we do have some grants for research, et cetera. And then, of course, the 864 cameras that are planned for implementation based on the generosity of the LA Police Foundation. But unlike digital in-car video, body-worn video brings up some unique issues, in part because the key differences of where body video is used and how it can be used. Body-worn video can be used in many more encounters that are not limited to what is seen on a street or a street corner or in the back of a police car. They will be able to be used anytime a police officer has a face-to-face contact with an individual or goes into a location that could be a home, a business, a restroom, a locker room, a variety of areas where the issues of privacy and civil liberties and the appropriateness of recording that become much more of an issue. It also provides evidence of the officer's perspective of the encounter. And that's a very important distinction because as designed, as you've seen in demonstrations by Sergeant Gomez and Ms. Goodrich, this is a device that is on the chest to try to give a perspective of the officer. But it's not simply the placement that does that. It's the technology itself with the range of vision, with the type of lens and the adjustments it makes to simulate how the human eye would look at something. And it does not have any enhancements for infrared or night vision and those types of things. Because to the best of what technology allows, it enables one to get the perspective of the officer, which is very different than in-car video, where the camera is videotaping from the front of the car as the officers may be forward or may be behind. It's very different than any surveillance video that could be recording from a building in a very different perspective. And that is a key advantage to what body video does. And we've seen the successes of body video just in the pilot program that we've had in the central area. And, of course, there have been many cities and other jurisdictions that have seen success, including and most notably Rialto, California, where the academic peer-reviewed research study was conducted and found a significant reduction in both citizen complaints and also in uses of force. So the way we approach this is looking and essentially asking four questions, and that had to be answered in large part in this proposed order. First, what is the purpose of body-worn video? There are many different expectations. There are many ways that it could be used, but determining what is the purpose of body-worn video for the Los Angeles Police Department, because all the rules and guidance and prohibitions and things that are enabled must flow from whatever that purpose and objective is. The second is, what should be recorded and when? The Inspector General spoke about the activation. We can talk about that, but we took a different approach with activation, making the default that it must be activated, as opposed to it should be activated in some circumstances where practical. But the presumption is it needs to be activated unless an exception applies. Third question is, what protections need to be placed to make sure we're protecting the privacy and civil liberties of not only the people recorded, but also respecting the rights and privacy of the officers, and making sure we do that but still have an effective program. And then finally, when should officers who are using body-worn video have access to the recordings? This is a usage policy for the officers and how they should be using it, and it's focused on when they should have used it. In addition, we tried to add some clarity in the way policies and procedures are laid out. You can see that it's a bit of a different format. It sets forth the objectives. I even convinced the department to change the font so it's a little bit more readable, the most difficult part of the whole process. But these were important questions that need to be asked, and that's how we approached it. And as part of that, the department embarked on a very ambitious outreach and research effort to make sure we were looking at all the issues, thoroughly thinking through all the issues, and having the debates and input necessary, meeting with numerous community groups, privacy advocates, law enforcement officials, those who use video and do not use video, legal experts, the political leaders, the union representatives, employee organizations, the Inspector General's office, prosecutors from the district attorney and city attorney's office, academic researchers, and many, many more people, and of course, the two community meetings that the police commission held, at which Ms. Goodrich, Sergeant Gomez, and I were there and actually answered questions from the audience. We also conducted an online survey in addition to the commission survey, where we received over 3,000 responses to questions regarding body-worn video, which were overwhelmingly very positive about moving forward it. And we conducted a very comprehensive review of the existing and proposed policies on body-worn video and digital in-car video nationally and including the UK. We also had many debates internally and externally about these various issues. There's no easy answers for some of these things, and when you're trying to strike a balance, which is what we strove to do, there are going to be arguments on both sides. But ultimately, we believe that we created a thoughtful, well-considered, balanced proposal that's specifically for the use of body-worn video by LAPD. And that's an important distinction because oftentimes the comparisons to other organizations. It is important that we have a policy and have procedures that recognize the uniqueness of the LAPD, the role and mission of the LAPD, its function in a very large, vast, dynamic city, and understands the oversight structure with the commission, with the commission's inspector general, and their access to this information, which is very different than most departments in the state of California and nationally. So what is the purpose that we sought to implement? It's the collection of evidence, the collection of digital evidence of what occurred during an investigative or enforcement encounter with a member of the public. Evidence that could be used for criminal prosecutions, evidence that could be used to resolve complaints, evidence that can promote accountability of officers who are seen committing misconduct, evidence that can be used for training and continuous improvement, which is the key core value of the department. And it's limited to investigative and enforcement activities with a member of the public, not just any interaction with a member of the public. The important part of this is not a surveillance program. It is not intended to simply just collect information, and it's intended to be specifically within investigative and enforcement activities with members of the public, especially in those situations where there's the potential for a conflict. And as you can see on the activation, there's a key set of different types of situations where it must be activated. And as I mentioned before, on the activation side of things, if you were to look at page two on section three, it's a very comprehensive list of when it's required. All of these situations that have some sort of interaction with a member of the public in an investigative enforcement activity. And also, the presumption is it must be activated. Now, there are going to be exceptions. There are going to be circumstances where an officer either cannot or did not activate the so, for example, when making a pedestrian stop or making a stop or maybe somebody jumps out at them, their first inclination will not be to turn on the video, nor should it be, because at that point, officer safety and the safety of the public should always be the paramount priorities. However, it must be, and the requirement is fairly clear, that they must articulate why they were unable to or did not turn on that video. And that is something that the department will be looking at and scrutinizing. I'm sure the inspector general will be looking at, as he's just mentioned, and in those circumstances to see if it's justified. We have to take into consideration the reality of police work and that there are going to be circumstances where it can't. Now, from a technical perspective, we have certain safeguards. Just as we do with digital in-car video, where there's a two-minute buffer prior to the activation. On the digital on-body video, once it's activated, there's a 30-second buffer. So even if there's a delay in activating it, it will capture 30 seconds prior to that, without the audio, of course. And there are going to be some difficulties with this, because unlike digital in-car video, which is automatically activated after 8 seconds of activating the light bar, which is a necessary component before you stop a car, that's not how. There will have to be some active pressing of the device in order to turn it on. So there will be those circumstances. But the presumption is you must activate unless an exception applies or unless you can articulate why you were prevented from doing so. And that is a shift, and it may be subtle from the way digital in-car video is, but I think it's an important change to make sure we are recording the duration of these events, as the IG indicated, was a concern. The other objectives that you see, the objectives are also laid out in the front, as you can see, about the criminal prosecutions promoting accountability, so I won't get into that. But in terms of what protections did we put in place, I think it's important that we did evaluate that there are going to be circumstances, given that officers will be going into very intimate private places, whether it's a person's home or other situations in sensitive circumstances, that there should be some discretion for the officer not to record, especially if it's a witness who refuses to provide information if they are recorded. Now, we do indicate if it's a confrontational situation that the officers must keep recording because we want to make sure that's covered. But taking in account those types of sensitive circumstances that they will inevitably encounter. We encourage that people are advised that they're being recorded, but we do not require consent. We also have strict protections against unauthorized disclosure because of the sensitive evidentiary nature of what will be recorded.
We encourage that the officers advise, but we don't require
that's
the
correct.
Officers advise.
Okay. That's correct. And part of that is part of the theory behind on-body video is that if people know that they're being recorded, that it may alter their behavior and reduce the chance of an escalation. However, if you had a consent requirement, logistically it would be very, very difficult.
Sure.
And you don't having to get the consent of a suspect who you're arresting would not really make much sense. In addition, you have to think about police officers will be chasing after suspects, and there are many people who could be recorded in those circumstances. Obtaining their consent after
sure.
would be very difficult
I got it.
To do. And then finally, even some minor modifications that we made after consulting with different experts on crowd control and management, the concern that maybe that we would be recording First Amendment protected activity that was not directly related to an enforcement activity, and there is a provision that it can only be done in the use of the video when they're taking some sort of enforcement or investigative action during a demonstration or other protected First Amendment activity. So we very carefully considered these concerns. Now, the one issue that has gotten considerable attention has been, should officers have access to the video prior to writing reports mm-hmm. or being interviewed after a categorical or other type of use of force? The policy sets forth, and it's fairly well known, that the department and every officer has an obligation to provide complete, accurate, and truthful reports, statements, testimony, and documentation. That is the goal. And part of the reason, and one of the central reasons we have body-worn video, is to provide independent evidence so that we can provide complete, accurate evidence of what occurred during an interaction. The department holds officers to a very high standard when it comes to making truthful statements, being accurate, not having omissions or errors, because jeopardizing their integrity jeopardizes and compromises the credibility of the department and our legitimacy with the public. This is true whether they're filling out a field interview card or they're providing testimony in court or they're providing a statement to an investigator. So consistent with recommendations that are included in the Police Executive Research Forum study that was jointly done with the Department of Justice and the Community-Oriented Policing Service, and consistent with what some other departments do, including Las Vegas, Mesa, Arizona, Phoenix, Minneapolis, New Orleans, San Diego, and Rialto, which allow their officers to see the video before they write a report or before they are interviewed, the department is extending what is the current practice and policy with the use of digital in-car video.
Categorical use of force cases?
In categorical use of force case, as is currently the practice under Special Order 45 for digital in-car video, once a categorical, which would be an officer-involved shooting, right. law enforcement-related right. injury, et cetera, the officer is restricted from looking at the video on his or her own. The supervisor is instructed immediately after to take the video away, and then all the other protocols are put in place, separating the officer, monitoring the officer, ensuring that he or she doesn't have contact with others and talks about the incident.
And then, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand. In that section, there's a reference. Let's look at it. So 19, I think, if I'm
yep.
reading by Roman
yeah,
numerals
it's 19.
Correctly. It says, an officer shall not review his or her BWV until authorized by the Assigned Force Investigation Division investigator. I'm trying to understand, is that essentially meaning until the FID investigator is there and can watch the video?
That's correct.
So it's not creating discretion within that, within the investigator. That is, the assumption is still that the officer, the prior policy, which is 18, which says officers are required to review recordings on their advice prior to documenting an incident, that's essentially what we'll come back to as soon as the FID investigator is there and ensures that the protocols are being followed.
That is correct. Now, the FID investigator does have some discretion, as the department currently has, that depending on the type of investigation, so for example, if it were a criminal investigation or if there were certain circumstances where viewing the video would be inappropriate for the investigation, they would have that discretion. Now, that's something that would certainly be elevated above that particular investigator. So they do have some discretion, but the default, Commissioner Salzman, you're correct, as currently is the policy, they would have access to the video, but only after FID has arrived and provides that video and they can watch it in a controlled setting.
What if FID says no?
Yeah.
If FID
says no, then they can't.
Then they cannot.
What the criteria are, what the standards are that the FID investigator uses, or as now you've suggested, it's a decision somewhere between the FID investigator, perhaps as high as the chief. Who's making the decision? Those are things that are not in the policy and I think are quite important.
Well,
I would like to understand those better.
Certainly. Well, as the current practice is, the default is that the officer is allowed to review the video, just as we expect them to do in any other use of force. There would be certain circumstances that would probably be somewhat unusual, but we do have that discretion where the FID investigator, especially if there's some indication that there was criminal conduct involved, that they would refuse to allow watching the video. That would not be the majority of incidents, and it has not been the majority of incidents ever since we've been using the digital in-car video for the last 5 years.
I appreciate that. I'm just trying to understand what those situations are and what criteria the investigator or the decision maker, if it's hired the investigator, would use to make that decision.
And I think part of that would be what the circumstances that they understand have gone on, whether there's some criminal activity and therefore it'd be inappropriate for them to see because there would be a criminal investigation as well.
And is that also true if there's a complaint? The incident happens, the member of the public says immediately, I'd like a supervisor here, I'm going to file a complaint. So the officer knows immediately there's a complaint in the works. Whether it's a force investigation division investigation or not, the policy requires the officer to watch the video prior to making a statement in a situation where the officer knows that there's a complaint against the officer?
No. In an internal affairs investigation, as in all cases where there may be additional evidence, it's up to the discretion of the Professional Standards Division, a Bureau, Internal Affairs, on what is shown and what's provided prior to
review. But the policy doesn't say
that. And if I can finish, partly because what it's referring to is categorical uses of force and the usage of the body video. It is not providing specific policies or procedures for the Internal Affairs Division. There are many different protocols and procedures that would differ from this and other parts of the policy manual. This was not intended to be all-inclusive of any way the body video would affect the policies and procedures of the department.
Complimentary to that.
Commissioner, if I could just add a little bit. A lot of the – you're right in questioning how a lot of this is going to be implemented because it's not spelled out in the policy, but I think a good roadmap to it is that some of the things that are anticipated in this policy have already kind of worked through the system with the digital in-car video system. For example, just to clarify – with FID doing an investigation, if they believe something they've looked at has a criminal component to that, requires further criminal investigation, they have the ability to break up their investigation into what's called a dirty and clean team. Right. Well, one person will be looking at the administrative aspects of the case, and there'll be another one that's preparing things for presentation to the district attorney's office and doing additional investigation to see what they have on there. So a lot of the mechanics and the way things are will actually work out with digital the on-body camera video system. I think you're going to see it's going to mirror a lot of what the existing process is for digital in-car video. And to that point, if there are any issues or discrepancies with that implementation, including the discretion and how they implement these items, and if we think they're not being done in a principled manner, those are one of the things I can promise you that I will bring to your attention immediately so that you can start engaging the department on what your and what the commission's intent is on some of these items.
I appreciate that. My frustration is we occasionally, actually more than occasionally, with some frequency when we question what's happening in the department or an officer's behavior, the answer from the department is that there are conflicting policies. And so that in this instance, the officer was complying with one policy, even though it's a conflict with another. So I'm quite frustrated that this policy, speaking to the body-worn videos, says quite clearly and affirmatively, the officer shall watch the video before making a statement. But we're now talking about a variety of exceptions that are not even referred to in the policy. And it seems to me that goes to the heart of what we're doing, the perception problem, that given the grave concerns that have been expressed nationally, not just here and, in fact, not focused on Los Angeles, the perception, which I think is inaccurate but is widespread, is that officers are not always honest, that we only discover the wrongdoing of an officer when there is a video recording of the behavior. And to me, given that perception, which I think is inaccurate, it would make more sense to bend over backwards to reassure a skeptical public by having the officer give a preliminary statement prior to viewing the video. And since what we're looking for is not only the truth, to the extent we can figure out that what that is, but as you've said, what the officer perceived at the time, it seems to me we are more likely to find out what the officer perceived at the time if we ask the officer or have the officer make a statement of what they perceived at the time and then allow the officer to look at the video. And if video changes what they remember or saw, they say that. And that's quite understandable. We've all had that experience. But so I appreciate what you're saying, but I'm finding it quite frustrating that this policy, given the amount of time that's gone into it, doesn't speak to these issues.
I think you're articulately saying one extreme side of this argument.
Well, Mr. President, I don't think I'm an extreme. I think I'm stating.
I'm telling you my opinion. And I believe that as it's certainly something that's been on my mind and is on everybody's mind. It's a very obvious situation. So we've looked at it, at least I have, I believe the department has, and I want to hear from the chief, from best practices, from recommendations from around the country, big cities and small cities, from experiences. I've been to some of these situations, and you've been to a lot more than I have because you've got more experience than I do. But these officers are separated immediately to keep them from making their recollections converge and everything else. And I think that you have a policy here, and maybe in practice it'll be tweaked. But I don't think that this is a that this interpretation is a reason to. Start from scratch. Chief, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Well, we certainly believe that this policy will help us get to the truth of what occurs. And we realize that it is not a perfect policy in that it doesn't address all the points of view that are encapsulated whenever you make a policy. You know, we have the on the one side, you know, you want officers to have faith in the system. You want officers to believe that the system is fair to them. On the other side, we have the extreme side of the civil rights issue, who wants no access whatsoever and to build as much conflict into the process as possible. And we have to find a policy that all of America will look at and that finds a strong medium of consensus that seeks the truth. You know, the officers cannot alter the video. The video shows what it shows. If they commit misconduct, if they have an out-of-policy use of force, the video will show that.
Do you believe there'll be situations when FID will say, officer, I'm not going to let you look at this video before?
I do believe that. Those are the videos. Those are the circumstances that I am extremely concerned about. That I want to avoid happening. You know, I hope every day that we don't have circumstances like that. But I'm also a realist. I also know that we may, and I have tremendous faith. And all the whole commission spends a lot of time with Commander Lopez and the FID investigators. You rely on their judgment for the reports that are put before you. I rely on their judgment at a use of force scene. Whenever a use of force occurs that has questions to it, Commander Lopez contacts me. He goes through his entire chain of command. The entire department focuses on that. And this policy allows him to do his job. It allows investigators to pursue the truth. And if they need to withhold the showing of the video, they will. But in most cases, and the policy is written that way, in most cases, it benefits the narrative. Because just as we do, I noticed that Commissioner Salzman is reviewing notes before he speaks and speaking from notes. I'm sure he prepared those earlier. You know, I think that, that is an important thing. When officers prepare notes, they review them before they testify. We've been dealing with in-car video for the last 5 years. Officers view in-car video. We haven't seen, huge conflicts. Actually, I think it strengthens the likelihood of the truth coming out. For decades, police officers have been carrying audio recording devices. We require that they access them before they write a report because we want the truth. And the truth comes from many, many aspects, and particularly in a criminal prosecution. Imagine a criminal prosecution where an officer believed to have seen a crime in progress, and the review of the video believes that his perception was inaccurate. Would you have us make that arrest? I would hope not. And I know that as a police officer for 40 years, once in a while you see things and it turns out that they're not as you perceived. So, it's not only about bolstering the officer's perceptions, it's also about providing the narrative for when you see things incorrectly. And then allowing the department, allowing the criminal justice system to work through that. And I will also add that I've had lengthy discussions with our district attorney, lengthy discussions with our city attorney. They support this policy in its conceptions, in the tenets of the way it's put forward. These are our partners in the criminal justice system. Our product is tailored for them.
Commissioner Salzman, why don't you take the final word on this, and then let's move through. Go ahead.
Well, it's not going to be my final word. I have quite a bit to say.
No, I mean on this one, Mr.
President. But I do want to respond one thing to the chief and one to you. The chief and I are in agreement much more than we're in disagreement. We're searching for the truth, and it seems to me the better way to get there is to have the officer explain what his or her perception was, and then watch the video or listen to the recording, and if that changes what they saw, that they talk about that, and that's completely logical to me, and I don't see why that's a problem, and I don't see why that doesn't get us toward the truth. Second, Mr. President, I just want to respond to you. You've characterized what I said as extreme, and you've suggested
this your interpretation of this position, okay. Not you as a person, obviously.
All right.
Break.
And I'm sorry. I didn't realize the difference. Because I'm happy to. I mean, I stand by the position I'm taking.
Okay.
I don't think it's extreme, or if it is extreme, then the policy is extreme on the other end. There are other departments that do this. They're reputable departments. It works in those departments. I don't consider them to be extreme. And beyond that, your suggestion that by talking about where we might disagree with this policy is the equivalent of starting from scratch, I just think is a completely incorrect. I'm not in any way suggesting we start from scratch. I'm suggesting we talk about the benefits and the disadvantages of the policy that's proposed. And I assume that's the purpose of our public hearing today.
Yeah, I agree.
So please don't suggest that.
No,
I
apologize for
okay.
that.
Thank you.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
When FID would step into the process and evaluate whether the officer involved should screen the video in advance, I'm curious, in terms of the present practice, when an officer involved shooting happens, the Inspector General's team sometimes shows up or always shows up?
If there's a categorical, we always show up.
Okay. And is there the kind of practice that involves both the Inspector General's staff and FID being in proximity to each other, having a conversation about what occurred? How does that work? And I'll tell you why I'm asking. At that moment in the field, there are going to be certain criteria, right, that will determine whether this is a categorical or a non-categorical, for example. And there are many more areas, but I'm sticking with the ones that could be categorical use of force. What I'm curious about is at that moment, a member of FID, is it a member of FID who will make the determination in the field? And if that determination is made that it is one thing, and then it gets to the level of the chief or some other, maybe this body, and it's determined that it's something else, Would the prior viewing of the tape by the officer involved affect negatively the investigation, prosecution, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, just in terms of process, and the Inspector General certainly can chime in. Typically, when it's categorical use of force, there are a number of notifications, including the Inspector General, Command Staff, FID, the District Attorney's Office, et cetera. Many of those folks respond. And they start investigating and see what occurred. At that time, the officer has already been separated, typically is kept at the station or someplace and is monitored to make sure there's no interaction, et cetera. That tends to be several hours before they're actually interviewed. And during that time, FID is looking into it, consulting with the Inspector General, and evaluating what the circumstances are. So typically, that kind of discussion would happen there, and one of the reasons why we do ask the IG to be there to oversee and help assist with the decisions that are being made. Typically, in a case where they would not allow somebody to view the video, that would be something that would be run up the chain of command.
Okay.
Now, in terms of what you said, if it would affect negatively in a criminal prosecution or some other way, one thing that's important to remember is that these are compelled statements by the officers. As compelled statements as part of an administrative investigation, those statements are not admissible in the criminal prosecution. They are kept separate from that because the law allows the department, in an effort to find out exactly what happened, to compel an officer to provide those details so we can make a determination for employment purposes, not necessarily for a criminal prosecution. And that's why the overarching emphasis and purpose is to find out what happened. And just to the point that Commissioner Salzman was making and indicating that I had said about the importance of the perception of the officer. Well, yes, it's very important to understand the perception of the officer, but that is different than finding out what the officer recalls was his or her perception.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And there are many ways that we use to make sure to ensure that we somehow enable an officer to recall what happened. And we do a walkthrough with the officer prior to an interview, and that is a procedure that's existed through the consent decree to walk through and see and figure out what's going on, and showing them evidence of their perspective on a device that they activated that's designed to provide their view of things is probably the closest thing you could get to an accurate depiction that will hopefully enable them to remember more accurately what occurred, especially after a very stressful, traumatic effect that science has shown has a severe effect on a person's memory.
Yeah, I just want to explain the word extreme here, okay, so it isn't taken out of context, okay? There are two ways to go on this. One is officers can see them, or two is officers can't. Both of those are the extreme sides. We have come in this in this policy you've presented to us, one that is a hybrid. There are cases that you state specifically where an officer would not be able to see those issues. Now, in addition, there have been people who have said publicly that they feel that they would not rather not have any policy, any on-body policy, or any use of these cameras if that's the case. And that's what I was referring to.
I think one thing that's important to remember, though, that as much as we trust our FID investigators and as much work as they've done and expertise that they have, that the FID investigators don't make the decision by themselves to make that determination not to view, not to allow the officer to view the video. That, in fact, is done in cooperation and discussion with staff officers that are there from the Office of Operations and with Commander Lopez, who's there, and then with conversations with the Chief of Police. So it's not something that's done without consultation.
I appreciate that. I'm sorry. And are there criteria that, that those folks use in the decision-making? Are there standards they can refer to, something that the Inspector General could actually look at and tell us whether they're being followed or not?
I think that every circumstance is different, and it depends upon what the scenario is and how it would impact the investigation, and that's best done by having a consultation with the Inspector General on scene, having a consultation with the commander who's in charge of categorical use of force investigations, and you know, with the commanding officer or Professional Standards Bureau and the staff officers that are at scene, so that we can make an overall best judgment and decision of what we should do that's in the best interest of the community as well as the officers.
Can I just ask Alex, please?
Yes, if I can clarify a little bit about our role, also the way I read the draft policy and what I intend to do to audit and look at it. So if there's a categorical use of force that occurs, there's alerts that go to everyone, including my team. I have an investigator that's on call 24/7. So no matter where it when it happens or where it occurs, my investigator will go out and monitor the investigation to see if there's any issues that are apparent, to make sure that people are being interviewed from the community, to look for scientific evidence, you know, bullet fragments, whatever's around, to make sure that the quality of the investigation is solid. There's a walkthrough that's done by FID to help them so they can do their investigation. So it orients them to where they should be looking and where they can find evidence. And we're plugged in from the very beginning of that process all the way through the end. And we'll be overseeing the police department's investigation into every aspect of that. So if we see any shortcomings, we'll immediately tell them this is something we think you need to look into. And then regardless
of... Sorry, do you tell them on site? Is that what you're saying?
Well, some of the things could be on site. Some of them will be reviewing transcripts of interviews. Some of them will be when we get the scientific evidence, when we do our own assessment, that we will say we think you need to go here, or you're missing this subject matter, or you need to ask these additional questions. We follow it all the way through. And even after we give those recommendations, we're doing our own investigation. So the chief will sign off on a report, and to the extent that we disagree with the chief's assessment on either the investigation or some of the conclusions, we give you, as you're well aware, a separate report indicating we think there's shortcomings here, or this needs to be explained there, or we have a different opinion. So through that process, we're intimately involved to be looking for all manner of things, including officers' discrepancy with the physical evidence and some of the other items. I want to clear up, though, at least the way, and the department can certainly tell me if I've got this wrong, but the way I read the draft policy is that the officers are always going to get to see their own video. The discretion part is for the other video, somebody else's video, whether it's on the side of a building or whether it's another officer's video. That is, I think, going to be difficult to unpack because it's going to be case by case, and you want to give the investigator the discretion to use that information in a way that makes sense for them when investigating the matter. It may make sense not to show them any video at all. it may make sense to show them a portion of the video or all of the video. I think as the Inspector General, I understand there needs to be some flexibility, but I also know that that's kind of perilous if it's not at least reviewed by my office, because you want to make sure that things are done in a very structured and disciplined manner. We communicate constantly with FID and the department, and I plan on also auditing these items as well to ensure that if, in fact, other video outside of the officer's individual video is going to be showed to them during an investigation, that there is an investigative need that we can see to this, and it's not just being shown for the sake of being shown.
I guess now I'm confused again. If I understood what you just said, tell me if this is correct, that your understanding of Section 19 is that at the end of the day, every officer in every situation will review his or her own body-worn video, period. The video that FID may say they don't look at is something other than their own video.
Well, the way I read it, I'm just going off the sentence in Section 19 that writes,
once authorized.
Yeah, until authorized by assigned force investigative division investigators, the next sentence, once authorized, the officer shall review his or her BWV recording, comma, and any other relevant BWV footage as deemed necessary and appropriate by the assigned FID supervisor.
So if I can clarify.
Please.
The investigator will always have the discretion, as does the command, to not show a video in the circumstances that we've discussed.
And the video meaning including the BWV?
Their video.
Okay, thank you.
So there's that. In addition, there may be other videos. And the reason why this clause is important is because in Special Order 45 adopted by the Commission for Digital In-Car Video, it has no language about FID having discretion about additional video. Now, it's typically not an issue in digital in-car because there are only going to be a few cars and not all of them will be in the right perspective. But in this situation where 7,000 police officers will be outfitted, there are going to be numerous officers who are likely to capture various parts of an incident on tape. And we needed to have something specifically that the ability to watch additional video had to be at the permission and authorized by FID, and there's not a presumptive right to do that. That's why that additional paragraph is
there.
But
does that mean, I'm sorry, so does that mean that it is not accurate that the officer will always view his or her video?
The presumption is that they will be able to view their own video. But there would be the discretion, as the chief and Chief Vegas, that if the circumstances are unique, that they can be prohibited from viewing the video under the circumstances. And we always have to have that sort of option because not every situation will be the same.
Let's hear the presentation. Chief.
Please remember, this is a user's policy. So, you know, if the FID guidelines that they use for making this decision aren't necessary for this piece. This is for the users. And what it tells the user is, don't watch your video until FID tells you you can. And that's the important piece.
When you say user, you mean training. Is that correct?
No, I mean the officer, the user.
Yeah. I understand. Right. The training of the officer.
Well, this is a user's policy. The policy that the user has to conform
to
for this tool. And FID's discussion about when they're going to deny access, that would not necessarily be contained in this policy. And if the commission wants a more thorough discussion, Commander Lopez can give that. They make hundreds and hundreds of decisions in a use of force investigation, all of which are important and all of which are regarding the evidence. And he can explain if the commission desires how they make those decisions.
Yeah. I think we should go through and hear the rest of your presentations and then open it up for commission questions, because I think we all have a bunch.
I don't think they, in their defense, I don't think they have specific presentations. Okay. They've made available for any questions regarding operations, et cetera. Commissioner, if you could just indulge me with one other point that I think is necessary because it's been part of the public discussion, which is the public's access to the video.
Sure.
And some criticism that the policy doesn't include the provisions of what would happen. First and foremost, as the chief identified, this is a user's policy. It is for the officers, and it's the primary paramount policy that needs to be established because we need to train 864 officers on how to use digital body-worn video between now and the deployment, which is hopefully in the next few months. So this is very important to get out and start the training on that. With respect to whether digital evidence will be disclosed to the public, there is no specific policy regarding that because our policy is to abide by the law and produce what's required and what we're obligated to, whether it's under the Public Records Act, whether it's by a court order, or any discovery obligations that we may have. We do that consistently with all evidence involving an enforcement and investigative situation, whether it's forensic evidence or digital evidence from the in-car video, or any other type of evidence that is collected as part of either a criminal or administrative investigation.
If I could ask for some clarification on that, I appreciate your raising it, and I do think it's a significant issue. I understand, if I understand correctly, the department's position has been that these videos will not be released to the public. At least that, I believe, is what's been the position, with some reference to state law. And I guess I would like to understand better why that's the case, given that other entities in California don't take that position. And I also just call your attention, you referred to the PERF report on the earlier policy, and on this one, the PERF report, it's page 19, says it's important for the department to communicate its public disclosure policy when the program is deployed as a way to develop public understanding and trust. And so I also come back to the question I asked before. If it's a blanket no, I'd like to understand why. If it's not a blanket no, I'd like to understand, I think it's appropriate in this context, to understand what the standards are, what the criteria are, for whoever's going to make the decision about those being released or not.
Generally, the department has not disclosed evidentiary, whether investigative enforcement information, whether it's been other digital evidence, other reports, other types of things about crimes or things that were considered investigative records. There is an exemption that is at the discretion of the entity that's the holder of the records in certain categories. Some jurisdictions do waive that exemption and do disclose it for a variety of reasons. I can't speak to that necessarily. Some do so because they have a local ordinance that requires them to do so beyond what the California Public Records Act has said. The chief has been public about how in this particular circumstances there are certain factors that would be reasons not to disclose it as a matter of policy, one of which being that the tremendous cost that would be incurred in having to review, research, redact, anonymize, and produce, and just as a small indication, 1.1 million recordings in South Bureau alone. It would essentially be incredibly burdensome and an incredible amount of money to the taxpayer to do so. We do take every Public Records Act request on a case-by-case basis, but we do go with that presumption that if there's an investigative or enforcement record that we generally do not.
Commissioner Saltzman, that was one of my exact questions that I wanted to ask the chief.
I'm glad we're both extreme on this.
We have an extreme agreement
exactly.
here.
Exactly. I'm glad.
But what I would like to do is I would like to ask the chief to respond to the situation.
Absolutely. So on a case-by-case basis, we make the decision. As a general rule, we have not released this kind of evidence to the public prior to the conclusion of investigation. That is not to preclude the fact that we would never do it, but I think that it is important to recognize that letting out one small piece of an investigation, because the video is not the entirety of the investigation, does not necessarily put it in the kind of context that is of great value to the public. Now, that is not to say that I will never do it. I believe that, we have seen some instances in the history of Los Angeles where it would have been beneficial. But I think that in the vast majority of cases, to the fact that I've never done it in 5 years with in-car video, I believe that the investigation should be kept as cohesive and as much of a hole as possible.
And I should point out, and this is one of the
remembering that that after the conclusion of the commission's review, that we are the most transparent entity that I know of. We release the Inspector General releases a redacted version.
Right.
And unique to Los Angeles, the LAPD, which is something I mentioned in the beginning, which is important in how we approach these issues, is all of you. The department is under the civilian oversight of the police commission and its inspector general, who have full access to all video, all evidence, all records in making determinations on the use of force, as well as other things that the inspector general had mentioned. That accountability is something that doesn't necessarily exist I'm not aware of it existing anywhere else in the state of California, which makes the structural system very different here at the LAPD than other departments.
So if I were wearing a on-body camera and said the word extreme in that, I would not be able to erase that word extreme, even though it's not the way I meant it.
That's
correct?
The
but I would have an opportunity to explain it.
That's correct, and under the city
or even say it might have been too extreme to say. Right? Okay. just saying. Okay, let's move on.
Okay.
Let's questions of the commissioners.
I have some questions.
Yeah, I have some of the chief also.
If you want, I've been talking. I do have some, but I don't want to monopolize the time. Right. So
no, go ahead.
Understood. Well, I guess I want to start first by saying thank you, to all of you, to the chief, particularly to you, Steve. The many in the department who've worked on this and the many stakeholders who have put in hours into this, some of whom are here today. clearly a lot of hard work, and although it's taken some time, I actually think has been done relatively quickly, given the complexity of the issues and the significant pressure that is focused on this. I do have some questions, some of which I've already raised. I do have one additional one. But before I get back to that, and so it doesn't completely overwhelm that, I just want to point out that I do think the policy is quite good in what I think is the most important area the Inspector General spoke about, which is the activation issues. I'm particularly pleased policy is clear regarding not only activation with that specific listing Mr. Alacon pointed to, but recording the entire contact, regarding required documentation when it's not activated, and the clear statement of when contact should not be recorded, showing the appreciation of the balance of privacy with the other things we're trying to do with this policy. And I don't want it to go unnoticed that I think there are some very good aspects to this policy, and that one in particular I think is excellent. Notwithstanding the strengths of the policy, I have two other issues I'd like to raise other than ones that have been. One is I'm quite frustrated with the final steps of the process we've used to get to this hearing today. Regarding that process, under our president's leadership, the commission reached out for comments and advice from many sources. We received quite a few comments and in response, and we all appreciate that information. What I'm frustrated about is that today we're presented with a final product for our approval, not a draft for our consideration. I had hoped that my fellow commissioners and I, and of course the public as well, would have the opportunity to review and comment on the proposed policies in draft form prior to the policy being put into final form. But as it is today, since the department and the Police Protective League have reached agreement on the policies through the meet and confer process, the commission's put in the position of adopting or rejecting the proposed policies. We don't have the real opportunity to make any changes in those policies without causing a potentially significant delay in the rollout of the cameras. I would have found it helpful for the commission to have held at least one public hearing during which we could hear from the department, the inspector general, and other experts, stakeholders, perhaps others in law enforcement, perhaps others performing civilian oversight, perhaps other inspectors general, about their experiences and their views of the pluses and minuses of the various specific aspects of this proposal. I would like to have heard some differing views on the specifics in the policies being considered before they became final. But that's not where we are today, and I'm frustrated by that. In that context, I want to point out the three areas where I have concerns. Two we've talked about. One has to do with the rule about officers reviewing the material prior to making a statement, both in categorical use of force cases and in cases of complaints. Second, regarding release of the recordings to the public. And for both of those, I think we need to see the standards and criteria that will be used, and I don't think we see those today. And then third, I don't think we've talked about, which is the limitations on the department's use of the recordings. That is a clear statement with standards about how the department will use the recordings given once it has those recordings. And I think the policy begins to speak to that, but does not speak to that effectively, and certainly does not provide us with standards that regulate those uses. In other words, will the department be looking at those only when there's evidence of wrongdoing or where there's a complaint? Will it be done in random audits, or would it be something more informal where someone in the chain of command would be able to simply look at those and try to figure out if there's something worth pursuing? So I'd be interested in hearing comments from the department on that last issue, if you're willing to do that.
Certainly. Oh, I'm sorry, Chief.
Go ahead, Ron.
I always defer to you. With respect to the access and or the review of video, we are currently under the same process that we have for digital in-car video, which is the department conducts periodic audits, inspections, reviews, as well as the inspector general who presented a report to you. We are considering specific protocols and some additional guidance on that, but we would want to do that in the context of both digital in-car and on-body, and a separate sort of guidelines or procedures for doing that. It didn't necessarily make sense to have of different rules in this. And as I've mentioned previously, I think Commissioner Salzman brought up the issue about the revisions to the digital in-car video policy. We're also looking to harmonize and have consistency. Given that we now have digital in-car that it was recently expanded to central area and central bureau, and we have all these, it made more sense to have a sort of common understanding of how and when access should be restricted for those purposes.
And to add, you know, we are in conversations with the Protective League regarding an inspection process, and this again is a user's policy. You know, those things will also be worked out, and there are many things that can be added to this on the outside of the user's policy, but we need this policy to move forward. The only other thing I would add is that Commissioner Salzman, you helped design this process, and to hear that you're frustrated with the outcome is frustrating for us. You know, there was no prior mention of bringing a draft policy forward. Everybody was aware of the steps. We've discussed them, you know, for quite amount of time now.
Well, Chief, I disagree with that, and it was my understanding, and I know it was Commissioner Kim's understanding from when I spoke to her yesterday, and she has a statement, which Mr. Tiefenk will read, was that, that, yes, we would have an opportunity to look at this in draft form and be able to discuss it prior to it being reached, an agreement being reached with the Police Protective League. And I'm sorry if there's misunderstanding about that, and I'm sorry if the misunderstanding is mine and Commissioner Kim's, but that was my understanding, and that's what I'm frustrated about.
Well, we've been quite clear about the steps here.
I would agree with that. Chief, I'd like you to consider creating within the audit division of the department itself a cadre of auditors that will review captured video to ensure compliance with the proposed order. Is that something that you can do?
You know, we're discussing a number of ways. You know, what given the fact that we nor anybody else will ever be able to audit or inspect all of these videos, we're trying to come up with a fair way that allows some ability to do random or whatever phrase an auditor would most likely use instances. And so we want to do that. We want to do that with concurrence of the union, and we've had those discussions. But we'll continue to have them.
Good.
And we do have experts in audit division who do currently audit, and we're also working with the Office of Operations to train supervisors and others in the field about the appropriate methodology to do audits pending the completion of this policy. And
Commissioner Madison?
I have a question as to, in the event that, as you were mentioning, trying to get alignment between the in-car video and the body-worn video, the policies around that, so that it all is consistent. Is there a process whereby if there was a determination that the policy needs tightening or enhancing? Because we are at the very beginning of this. We can't anticipate everything.
Sure.
But is there an expectation that if there needs to be enhancements, adjustments, tightening of the policy, that it would come back before the commission?
Absolutely. Any change to the policy in the proposed order that you're reviewing today would be subject to all the requirements, including meet and confer, et cetera, yeah, but also coming back to the commission for approval in a special order. And we do expect changes. I mean, this is probably the most ambitious program in the country in deployment of body-worn video in such a diverse, you know, a city and so many places. We don't know all the answers. We are going to learn from our experiences just as we've learned from the in-car video experience. And I would expect and anticipate that we will come back, and we should come back, and we need to constantly evaluate how this policy is being implemented and what should be changed to make sure our objectives are being met.
I want to talk about the process for a second, because it sounds like, there have been 8 innings where everybody agreed, and now we're the 9th inning. There seems to be some different interpretation. Moderate, not extreme.
I agree.
I wanted to create a process here that would be America's process, that would be the public's process, that would have every potential input for stakeholders, including stakeholders. We begged stakeholders to come to meetings, to have this as open as possible. I was that had to do with input. That had to do with input. I wanted input to come from all the commissioners. I wanted input to come from all these white papers. I got dozens of them and dozens of them. I wanted input to come from the public. I wanted input come from people with all kinds of views. I also felt that it was important not to release a draft. In fact, there has never been a draft until it was approved by the negotiation between the Protective League of 10,000 officers who actually are going to wear these things and the department. And then it became a draft that I guess went to the DA also for review. But I felt that why should I be privy to that document before the public is? And if I shouldn't, why should any of the commissioners be privy to that document before the public is? We have been privy to the process. We have been privy to input. We have all been reading about this. We have all been listening to the surveys, to the speakers, to the other cities, et cetera. So when the next person comes through and says, well, we're going to design our process, you know, so let's take a look at LA's. You know, will they change the 9th inning to have an extra week or 2 weeks? Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. But that was my intention with the process, to keep it as open as possible, to keep it as to keep the stakeholders as involved as possible, and ultimately, that's all about input. Ultimately, a policy which has to be approved by this commission, before it does, has to be agreed on by two parties. And that's it. The Police Protective League, which represents 10,000 officers that are going to be involved, and the department. So that's my explanation, defense of the process, and just like the policy, maybe somebody else will have a different process when they go on. And just like this policy, In my hope, this policy is written, you know, to me in pencil. It's not. It is not written. It is not etched in marble, because we're at the very beginning of making history in law enforcement. And in 6 months or a year from now, we're going to know a lot more than we know now. We are going to have actual LAPD experiences. We are going to have situations where, if it copies what's happened so far in other communities, where use of force incidents have gone down by 40% and 50%, where complaints against officers have dropped by 80%, where claims, where litigations, where all of these issues have dropped by just incredible amounts, because we have a policy, I say that's the reason to move forward with the policy in pencil, which doesn't mean that every 6 months when you come back to us with criticisms of what we're doing, because we're on the early stages of the technology and everything else. That's why I believe and want to just sort of in retrospect say, you know, what my thinking was. I sleep at night all the time. But I got to tell you, 1 day delay in these cameras going on officers, when you're talking about reduction in officer-related complaints by 50%, reduction in uses of force, I'm sorry, 80%, reduction in uses of force by 50%, by the kinds of sea change things that are happening in law enforcement, I don't want that on my brain. That I these cameras are here. They're in some closet somewhere. I don't know where they are, just like I don't know where the drones are, but they are somewhere, and I want to get them out of wherever they are and on these officers absolutely as soon as possible. And if we have to make changes in this policy, then I'm one for doing that. Other questions?
Mr. President, I do have the statement that Commissioner Kim asked to be read into the record, and I've conferred with the city attorney, and that is able to be done, and at the appropriate time, I'll be happy to do that, but I'll wait for your direction, sir.
Well, it seems appropriate to me. Anybody feel it's not appropriate time?
Now, sir?
Okay. Go ahead.
Very good.
You're going to read the statement of Commissioner Kim, who was unable to be here.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct, sir, yes.
Okay.
These are Commissioner Kathleen Kim's comments. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to provide this statement. I apologize for my absence, which is unavoidable, but I regret not being present at the meeting for what I believe is an important discussion addressing the LAPD policy on body-worn video. I would like to thank President Soboroff for his leadership on this issue, as well as the department and the PPL for their cooperation in piloting the program and working together to develop a policy that upon which they agree. Body-worn video has the promise of preventing law enforcement encounters that might escalate into violence by putting both officers and civilians on notice that their conduct is being recorded. This increases the accountability of both parties and therefore has the potential of encouraging all parties to think before they act in order to resolve issues peacefully. It is these types of tools that may encourage measured alternatives to some law enforcement encounters that result in violent and tragic outcomes. These alternative approaches to law enforcement interactions with the public may then help to increase trust between community members and the police. As a result, I am pleased to see this program move forward, and I think the policy addressing body-worn video is generally sound. It requires officers to activate body-worn video during investigative and enforcement activities and preserves individual privacy rights by preventing activation during non-law enforcement activities. The policy also protects the confidentiality of such recordings and delineates supervisor and command staff roles in ensuring the responsible implementation and usage of body-worn video. I, however, do have concerns regarding some aspects of the policy itself, as well as the process undertaken to finalize the draft policy the Commission is considering today. While I realize that since I am not present, I cannot benefit from answers to the following issues, I think it is still important to raise the following issues. First, regarding the substance of the policy, I would like to hear from both the department as well as the IG on provision 19, procedure for reviewing body-worn video recordings and categorical use of force incidents. This provision permits the involved officer to review the related body-worn video recording of the incident once authorized by FID before the officer is interviewed by investigators. While I understand that this provision is consistent with the vast majority of jurisdictions that utilize body-worn video in an effort to obtain a factually accurate account of the incident, I also appreciate the perspective that such provision offers the involved officer with an opportunity to adjust his or her narrative to justify, in the rare case, what appears in the video to be officer misconduct. I would like to better understand what procedure or policy will prevent that latter occurrence. I would also like to gain a better understanding of when and how body-worn video recorded incidents may be provided to the public. Finally, it would be useful to know how body-worn video recordings will be utilized by the department and what limitations, if any, are placed on the usage of such video and investigations. In addition to the substance of the policy, I would also like to share my thoughts regarding the process under which the policy was developed. I, like my co-commissioners, as well as the public, assessed this draft policy last Friday. I am aware that and was present at several public community meetings where the department and the commission listened to feedback from community members addressing their thoughts and concerns about body-worn video. I am also aware that the department engaged with additional community stakeholders in the development of this policy. However, I think the commission and the public would have benefited from having more time to consider the draft policy before receiving it in its final form today. Review of a tangible document that has attempted to balance the interests of all parties, the department, rank and file officers, civilians, and civil rights advocates, offers an opportunity for more meaningful and substantive evaluation. Moreover, such evaluation may have been facilitated by testimony from a diverse range of experts at a public hearing. In the end, I understand the need for expediency with body-worn video, and once again, I congratulate the department on its openness to general community concerns and also drafting a policy with the cooperation of the PPL. The city has mandated LAPD's use of body-worn video, and other jurisdictions have followed this trend in light of several recent cases of police violence. Yet, I want to acknowledge the importance of Los Angeles as a city in our national landscape. The LAPD in particular is looked upon as a leader for constitutional policing, and so its policies will continue to serve as a model. It is therefore even more imperative that the policies governing the LAPD remain invested in a process of transparent and thoughtful deliberation. Although I am not present to benefit from the discussion today and provide an informed vote on the policy, I would like to request the IG continues to review the deployment of the body-worn video and evaluate the effectiveness of the policy and report back to the commission in 6 months.
Are there any questions that anyone has or anything that Commissioner Kim has brought up that anyone feels merit further response, because a number of it has been covered, but is there anything else, Commissioner Saltzman, anything else do you think?
No, I just, in response to the chief's statement earlier, I think her statement suggests, and what she told me yesterday, is that she, like I do, understood in a number of public hearings that the folks in front of us or the chief indicated that we would have the opportunity to talk about the specifics of the policy proposal before it became final. And I regret that there is a misunderstanding about that, but I know it's shared by Commissioner Kim, and I think her statement makes that clear.
Okay, I want to do public comment. Yeah, Commissioner.
I just wanted to go along with a motion.
Okay, except
are
I
we
think
ready?
We have public comment.
Yeah,
no?
Public comment.
We have public comment, and then I need to just be confirmed that we're ending debate. If we're moving on to public comment, we have 7 public comment speakers. The first 4 are Christy Eckert, Adam Rice, Steve Diaz, and Joseph Thomas.
Welcome.
Good morning, sir.
Thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Good morning to everyone. I'm Christy Eckert from the Los Angeles Police Protective League. And on behalf of the League, I'd like to thank the Commission, specifically Commissioner Soboroff, for championing the body worn camera program and ensuring that the league has and will continue to be a part of the conversation about this important program. Over the past several months, the league has been working closely with the department in the meet and confer process regarding the deployment of the cameras within the LAPD. These discussions have been constructive and have resulted in a body-worn video policy that we believe is fair, reasonable, consistent with Department of Justice recommendations, and our current in-car video policy. Video is not new to LAPD. The digital in-car video policy was negotiated 5 years ago, and many officers are familiar with its practical application, which we believe will ease the transition to body-worn cameras for the officers. Video can be very beneficial for providing a reliable account of events and helping officers get criminals off the street. However, it's critical for officers and the public to remember, and as the policy clearly states, these body-worn camera recordings provide a limited perspective and are not to be relied on as the sole piece of evidence, but rather used in conjunction with all other available evidence, including statements, interviews, forensics, and documentary evidence when evaluating the appropriateness of an officer's actions. We agreed to mandatory viewing by officers of their own video prior to any interview. With that understanding, the LAPPL supports the special order regarding body-worn video policy. We're confident that the policy, as we understand it, balances everyone's rights and interests, the officers, the department, the city, and the community, and believe that body-worn cameras will help promote mutual accountability, accuracy, and assist in the continued effort to strengthen the community's trust as LAPD officers continue to protect and serve the residents of Los Angeles. Thank you.
Thank you.
Adam Rice.
Welcome, sir.
Good morning, commissioners. Look, a really big question sticks out, and Commissioner Saltzman, I appreciate you raising it. You know, I appreciate, why was there not a draft shown to the public? That's a very good thing. I mean, it's great that the LAPD and the LA Police Protective League got to come together, and these are the two parties that decide this. Well, unfortunately, you move with taxpayer money from 4 million people around this city. So actually, I believe that we should have a chance to review it, especially to review the footage that is collected. I mean, and it's what's the best way to say that? It's not that we don't trust you, but you lie when it comes down to it. You know, we've seen the manipulation of video. We've seen the sabotaging and no prosecution. Not even people being fired or disciplined for sabotaging 90 cameras on the patrol cars. We've seen that. You know, what we really want is real accountability. That's what we asked this board for. That's why I'm handing you this community connection to also address your comment, Chief, which is civil rights organizations want conflict. So as you peruse this paper, yes, we discussed the LAPD. We discussed their accountability to the community. But conflict? What we continue to say is peace. We want peace. We want safety for our community. We want our people not to be gunned down in the streets. We want Africa to be alive and not slaughtered by the police. We want Treshawn Carey not to be held on $1 million bond by the LAPD because she actually witnessed LAPD misconduct. A great man once said, of course we want peace. Black people need some peace. White people need some peace. But we're going to have to fight. We're going to have to struggle for that peace because the people we're asking for a peace are a bunch of megalomaniac warmongers. Next. And they don't even understand what peace means.
Next.
And this is what we're facing.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Steve Diaz.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Steve Diaz, and I am with LA CAN, a member organization of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. It is extremely unfortunate that such an important topic is being talked about while many people are out of town on similar issues of police violence. The department's very own report states that the first objective of body cameras is to capture and record evidence in criminal prosecution, raising the question, are these cameras going to be used against us or to protect us? The South Lake City Police Chief himself said that, excuse me, that at best, Body cameras do not prevent police misconduct or use of force. They are just an avenue to document officers' encounters with citizens and, in most cases, capture the good work of police officers. Body cameras are an empty reform based on marketing hype to expand the surveillance state. The police department already gobbles up over half of the city's budget, meaning almost 50 cents on every dollar that people pay in taxes is going to the police department, adding an additional $4 million of cost for these body cameras who have shown to be a failure is unacceptable. Body cameras are not a true reform, and there's countless examples that can be pointed to highlight that fact. The Stop LAPD Spying Coalition submitted a report over email last night that goes into further detail of these issues, which I noticed Commissioner Soboroff is really looking into sort of white papers. In closing, it's extremely important, and I also echo Commissioner Salzman's concern that as an oversight body is to provide comment before an agreement is reached. What type of oversight are you providing if the agreement's already being reached and your reasoning then is it's a user policy? That is not oversight. That is just called signing off on something. Thank you.
Thank you. And we did receive your email from this morning.
Mr. Thomas, can you give me 1 second, please? Will the following three people please make their way? Mr. Herman, Peter B. Ring, and Tud Hayes, the final speaker. Mr. Thomas, Joseph.
All right, thank you.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Thomas. I'm also a member of the LA CAN and also a member of Stop LAPD from Spying.org. All right. Several cases, studies of police killings highlight the racial, legal, institutional, and internal police department disciplinary policy barriers and biases that additionally render body-worn cameras ineffectual, which proponents of this technology have been notably moot in addressing.
Would you move the microphone? Let him start over. Let's give him his full 2 minutes, but could you keep your stay away from the microphone a little bit so we can understand what you're saying?
Right.
Thank you, sir. You may begin again.
All right. Several case studies of police
killings highlight the racial, legal, institutional, and internal police department disciplinary policy barriers and biases that additionally render body-worn cameras ineffectual, which proponents of this technology have been notably mute in addressing. Body camera footage has not and will not put an end to the impunity of law enforcement. Eric Gardner, Africa, Kelly Thomas, and countless others have been killed on camera. Their assassins left to walk amongst the living. No comparable repercussions body-worn cameras won't provide accountability. Just more shocking footage. Michael D. White, an Arizona State University criminology professor, wrote for the Department of Justice that there's been absolutely no research done to support the claim that body cameras would foster greater trust between communities and police. Cameras only capture the police point of view. The Nation stated, when video footage is captured from the police's perspective, it allows officers to narrate the events being recorded. This reduces the objectivity of the event being recorded, as body cameras cannot document close proximity encounters between the police and citizens. As you say here now, as the commissioners, everybody seems like it's going to be going the same way. You're going with the cameras. But all I know is I'm black African American. I got 700 black African Americans dead down here by your LAPD, by your SWAT. There has been no convictions. There has been no sign-offs of it. And instead, you're talking about justification, and I'm talking about 700 of my people down here because I'm black. You're exonerated. Chief, you exonerated, the mayor exonerated, and yet and still you call justice. The question is today, ladies and gentlemen, with this going on, can you one day wake up in the morning and say, can we now become the new Baltimore?
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Herman.
Categorical? I don't know. I call it violation of the civil rights. With perspective to the Attorney General, again, as I mentioned in the past, conflict of interest chief of police near the attorney general? Is it the same as putting a camera on and off when you want it on and off? Why not have the camera run constantly on a regular basis? That way there is no protocol of mistake to what you're observing. When I'm in the subway, I know the camera's on me all the time. That's why I like to stand at the edge, Mr. Beck, to make sure that I don't fall into the tracks. So the point I'm getting at is that keep the videos always on, and I emphasize FID and the protective lead. Keep the videos on all the time. Viewing all the continuous activity of both behaviors of the civilians and the police department. For we no longer want to become victims based on the presumption perspective of the city attorney's point of view of the violation of the Brown Act or the inspector general's concern to address the real issues that are we following the rules of integrity to guarantee that life is more important than death.
Speak to the mic, please.
So, city attorney, follow the same rules of I've always educated you to follow. 54950 to 54963, the Brown Act, Ralph M. Brown, because the monkeys with the tails at City Hall, Mr. Englander, who violated my rights, and the Sergeant of Arms who violate my rights under the Brown Act, I say to you, it falls on the hands of our mayor, Eric Garcetti, to violate our Brown Act.
Peter Beering.
Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chief Inspector General. Peter Beering from the ACLU of Southern California. As you're hopefully aware, when this process started more than 18 months ago, the ACLU was optimistic about body cameras and supported the department's efforts in this and direction and have been supportive through much of it. But that is part of why it saddens me today to say that we do not support the deployment of body cameras under this policy and, in fact, would oppose it. I think this policy is flawed and actually fails to address some crucial issues with respect to body cameras. And many of those have been fleshed out, issues about officer review, allowing officers to review video when they are under investigation for categorical uses of force and complaints, which I think at best taints officer testimony and undermines public confidence in the investigation, and at worst assists officers who are inclined to do so in lying to come up with a story consistent with video. We're also concerned about some of the issues of clarity with respect to when to record, not the general rule, but the exceptions and how those will be interpreted, and the lack of clear rules on when the department will exercise its discretion under law to release video, not only from a perspective of transparency and allowing public access to important information, but also privacy and when the department will not release sensitive video, and additionally limitations on use. But I also wanted to second the concerns about the process, that after an 18-month process where the department has been working on this policy, working on testing and piloting these devices, that the public and even this commission is given less than 2 business days to look at the final policies and hash out these issues. I think the discussion this morning illustrates that there's still real questions, not only about the policy, but also actually what the policy means, not only about the policy questions. And so I would encourage the commission to postpone approval of this by a few weeks to allow a proper public hearing with input from other parties, including experts in the public. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hayes?
We've seen only one video of what these cameras do. A lot to be desired. In fact, it says that perhaps you're withholding something, hiding something. First of all, the camera doesn't show the officer's perspective. The officer can move his head up, down, left, and right. It's called universal. Officer can also do that with his eyes, called universal. The camera records, but it doesn't record in stereo and give directions of the sound. So it does not at all replicate what the officer might be observing. The important thing for you to do to satisfy the public is reenact, pretend, put on a show, Hollywood will help you, of authorized, legal, and policy uses of force, and unauthorized. For instance, if a chokehold is being executed on a suspect, Does it take place from behind? Usually it does. But will that camera be smothered by the body of the suspect? Will the audio be cut off by the body of the suspect? If an officer is standing up upright and kicking a suspect in the head, will the camera capture that? Of course not. So what we need is to see those circumstances where an officer might be doing something out of policy and reenact it and show us what that camera is going to pick up in that reenactment. That's the only thing that makes any sense. Otherwise, you're lying, as the gentleman said. So I've only seen one thing, a takedown in a park on a grassy area. As I pointed out, officers are not dressed to perform. When they chase a suspect and take them down on the concrete or the asphalt, the officer can probably get hurt. Another problem. So what we need to see is real-life reenactments of what might happen when an officer's out there doing things we care about. And the other thing, Bluetooth that holster, so when the officer pulls that gun out, that camera turns right on.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes.
That's the final speaker.
Well, that was the final speaker?
Yes.
Okay.
On that item.
Are there comments or...
are we
Commissioner Figueroa? Yeah, go ahead.
I want to explain my vote, so I just want to make sure that I do that at the right time.
Okay.
Whether that's after the motion and a seconded or now.
I didn't hear a motion.
Need a motion second.
Well, for me, since it's not set in marble, and we can make changes as we go along, and we want to move forward, and that our IG will review us and help us monitor, I want to move that the commission approve the department's report to move forward.
I would like to make a friendly amendment to add to direct the Inspector General to do an audit on compliance independent from the department.
Okay.
Do we have a second? I'll second. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Commissioner, could you restate the motion?
The way I said it?
Okay, or...
Because we're talking about...
Because one on page of the 8B is the motion as...
Yeah, you're moving the motion as recommended.
Right. As recommended by the department.
Okay. With my friendly amendment to add direct the Inspector General to do an audit on compliance independent from the department.
So who has to? Oh, so you have to accept the friendly amendment.
I accept the friendly amendment.
Second.
All those in favor?
I'd like to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I want to reiterate. Appreciate all the hard work that's gone into the policy. Appreciate all the people who helped make it be as good as it is. And that I recognize there are some very good aspects of the policy. I also want to just try one more time to be clear about my frustration with the process. Mr. President, I do not question your motives. I do not question your desires. I do think the process has had a tremendous amount of public involvement, and I appreciate that. My frustration is I would prefer that we had the opportunity for at least one public hearing where before we reached prior final agreement, we could have talked about the draft. And in the end, I'm going to vote no. I'm going to vote no based on the three issues in particular that I raised. It seems to me there are ambiguities in the policy regarding prior viewing of the video, regarding release of the video to the public, and regarding use of the video by the department. And I think, as the civilian oversight, we ought to make those clear before we approve the policy. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let's just do a roll call on the vote.
Sure. So the motion, to be clear, is to accept the department's report and direct the Inspector General to do an audit of compliance.
Yes.
Commissioner Soboroff?
Yes.
Commissioner Madison?
Yes.
Commissioner Figueroa?
Yes.
Commissioner Salzman?
No.
Okay.
We have a majority of the
Thank
vote,
you.
So the vote is the report is approved.
Let's move to 8C.
Thank you.
8C is the Inspector General's report dated April 28, 2014, relative to the review of the Department Code 3 collision reports.
Good job, Dan.
We have no public comment speakers on this one.
We have what?
We have none.
Okay. Any questions on the... I thought I had one question.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Commissioner Saltzman.
So we're talking about 8C, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. On page 4 in the report...
Yeah. On paragraph 5.
Paragraph 5.
Second paragraph.
Well, the last line of the first paragraph, okay. And then the second paragraph.
Okay, so I get
the same question. Which points out problems with the wearing of the seatbelts, and in particular that 26 of the 49 were shown to have been wearing seatbelts, leaving quite a few that either we don't know or we know they were not. So I have two questions. One is, what's the department done about that monitoring? That is, so that when the next report comes, we actually have 100% of knowing whether, in fact, they were wearing the seatbelts.
Can I ask my question? Because it's virtually the same thing. We've got 14 officers. The potential is seatbelt non-use could be as low as 29%, which to me is astronomically high, or as high as 47%, which to me is extreme. It's my favorite word today. So I'm just saying, what is it going to take for cops to wear their seatbelts? I mean, what else do we have to do? Because it's just taking money away from everything.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah.
It's Captain Phil Fontanetta, Commanding Officer, Emergency
yes,
Operations Division. And within Emergency Operations, I have the Traffic Coordination Section. I'd like to point out that you'll see the date January 1st, 2014 through June 30th, 2014 is the sampling of those incidents. Since then, the department has published Special Order Number 12, dated December 17, 2014. As we were working with the Inspector General's office, the department did recognize that we needed to shift our focus with very particular attention to command emphasis and the use of seatbelts, not only on the educational component, but auditing and in overall holding accountable the officers that are not wearing those seatbelts. With that, the Fleet Safety Report was modified, and what we have is, for my division, Emergency Operations Division, with emphasis from the Fleet Safety Coordinator, wearing of the seatbelts, we're tracking that. In addition to that, the commanding officer of the involved employee shall make notification for the usage of seatbelt and what the recommended action for officers that were not wearing those seatbelts. Of most importance is the overall oversight from that particular bureau's input and review from the commander or the deputy chief. And so we believe that this form, although we've just begun using it at the beginning of the year, is a valid document to help us track the occurrences. Now for the education component, I'd let John Peters discuss that.
Hey, good morning, Commissioners. Commander John Peters from the Office of Operations. So as you're aware, the report goes back to the first 6 months of 2014. The beginning of this year, 2015, there was a transition in command at the Office of Operations. But having said that, there have been a lot of steps that have been put in place that the current director embraces and reinforces and will be expanded upon as we move forward. But in highlighting some of those things and this information was verified by my staff to make sure that these things were actually occurring and happening. There have been hard metal buckle-up signs that have been posted at the exit gates of all of our police stations except for two. One is Rampart, and that's due to the nature of the gate there, the bars the way that gate is constructed, and we're looking to remedy that situation. And the second is over at Northeast, where they're undergoing construction. They have a chain link fence apparently right now that is again something that we're looking to fix. But there have been posters that have been created that are also within the stations that are reminding the officers to use their seatbelts and to drive safely, and those are inside the police stations. Also, the areas, both on their own and through mandate, have been addressing the issue and continue to address the issue at roll calls as it goes to seatbelt usage and safe driving. Every area, every command in the city conducts spot audits by their field supervisors. A number of the commands do this on a daily basis, and many of them do it weekly, and then some do it per DP. And then those commanding officers for those commands, when they come to CompStat and they are asked questions regarding their traffic collisions and seatbelt usage in CompStat, and those questions come from me now, they are held accountable on those issues, also to the extent of their roll call training that is provided. Also, it comes up as perishable skills training every other year with safe driving and seatbelt usage. There was a precision driving initiative during the first quarter of 2013, which many of you may be aware of, where they took wrecked police cars and they put them on display at the stations. There was also a video that was created, the Fifth and Wall incident that you may have seen as well, that has been viewed by our officers. And I think also very importantly from a proactive standpoint is it has been mandated that for officers that are seeking to be field training officers and obtaining an upgraded police officer position in operations, that seatbelt usage and safe driving is a mandated question as it goes to the interview process for those officers that are competing in that. And that's essentially where we're at this point.
The only thing I would add to that, Commissioner, is that the department has struggled with this. The entire profession struggles with it. The real solution is in the cars. The real solution is telematics.
Right.
And, we are working aggressively to get there. Our motor transport division is, I think, the best in the nation, and they have come across with a pretty much cost-neutral method by which we can install telematics in all our vehicles, new vehicles. And we're working through that. So that's the ultimate solution here. And that will end up creating not only a driver snapshot of seatbelt usage, but also a vehicle usage, and will become valuable not only as an officer safety piece, but also as a resource management piece.
Go ahead.
There's one other issue that the Inspector General points out, and that is that somewhere between 16 and 25 of the officers who were not belted, 5 received corrective action from the department. So I'd like to understand from the department about that. Is there that process? Do you see that changing going forward?
I can't speak to each one of those individually. My understanding is that they range from a comment card to a
for those 5
per personnel complaint investigation.
For the remainder of 11 to 20, where there's no corrective action, is that something of concern to the department?
Yeah, I don't know where we're at on those issues, sir. I would have to get back to you on those particular cases, those 11.
And I would appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to me the telemetrics, how it's going to work with, when it works and what it'll be doing in relation to seatbelts?
Well, telematics is a
telematics is
an onboard management system within the vehicle that measures speed, that measures force. It can measure G-forces. It measures whether the lights are on, which lights are on, seatbelt usage, idle time, basically almost any factor that is of interest to us. So I think probably the best thing, rather than have the chief give you like a half an explanation, is that we have Vartan or Motor Transports come in and give you a full explanation. And actually, we have it in a number of vehicles right now, and I think that would be a good thing for the commission to see. It also provides updated vehicle location, so it's a resource management tool too.
Okay,
I have one question, and I hope you didn't already address this while I was searching. on page 3. Roman numeral 4, the omission of officer speed and collision reports. Has that been resolved in terms of the supervisors signing off on reports where there's no notification of speed?
Give me a second. That has the recommendation has been been taken. We've been in conversation, and through the telematics, that will be remedied. However,
but in the event, this is one for me that's just like today. If there were an accident report submitted, and even though the speed at which I was driving were not included, my supervisor signs off on it. So what I'm asking is, have the supervisors stopped signing off on incomplete reports that have such an important...
No, because the department under our traffic manual, we don't consider that an incomplete report.
I see.
I'm not explaining that.
I will, I'll try. Okay.
Well, slight explanation.
Okay. Yeah.
Commissioner, currently TCS is the keeper of the traffic manual. It's being rewritten and under review right now. And to your point, under 3 Solid 701-4F, it's a little ambiguous the way that it's written right now. The officer shall report the speed, but then it just gives an exclusion of if known. And what we want to do is go into that a little bit deeper as to where, if the speed isn't known, that the report show why it isn't known, and that when the sergeants are reviewing it, that that point is addressed and not glossed over or omitted. So that's in the works right now.
Thank you. Thanks.
Lieutenant, can you just state your name for the record? Who just spoke?
I'm sorry. I'm Lieutenant David Ferry, Emergency Operations Division.
Commissioner Saltzman?
I'm ready to make a motion if we're there. I move approval with the added instruction to the chief that the department report back to us on the issue relating to the corrective actions taken and not taken.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Mr. President, we have approved item 8A, but Mr. Ted Hayes is asking if he can make a comment on 8E. I'm sorry, 8E.
8E, Mr. Hayes. Thank you.
I'm hoping that you find this as curious and disturbing as I do. This is on waste management. Now, the city will pick up your trash, your garbage cans, everything free. It'll pick up large, bulky items like refrigerators and stoves and couches, but it will not pick up hazardous waste. The public is required to take that hazardous waste someplace and dispose of it. How expert are they to carry hazardous waste around in some kind of container they may configure and dispose of it? And dispose of it where? And it seems that the LAPD has the same problem with the city and their refuge and disposable waste. It seems to me that we ought to have the kind of expertise to send the pickup truck out to pick up the paint cans, gasoline cans, whatever might be considered to be hazardous waste, and have the city dispose of it. Why is it resting upon the police department, as well as all the citizens of LA, to somehow manage something that's dangerous, hazardous waste? I think that's unconscionable. I think that somehow we've gone wrong where we cannot handle the most serious aspect of our refuge in the city, which is hazardous waste. I have questioned sanitation about this several times. You get no lucid answer from those people. They're funny. Anyway, I would hope that everyone can recognize that this should not be imposed upon the citizens as well as the police department to get a contract out to pick up hazardous waste. We don't know how to do that. We don't know what it entails. We don't know what landfill to take it to, if indeed it goes there. So please consider finding some way to have the city sanitation department take care of hazardous waste.
Thank you.
We are now on item number 9, public comment period. We have 2 public comment cards, Mr. Ted Hayes and Mr. Herman.
Mr. Herman has left the building. Oh, he's too late. Close out public comment.
Mr. City Attorney, I hope you'll recognize that this item was partially on the agenda, and that is the fact that it's embarrassing to see the kind of videos we have shown for... Suicide by cop, and the camera. The Suicide by Cop was an O. Henry ending. We don't know how it turned out. And that's not right. You shouldn't do that. If there was a Suicide by Cop, we don't need the ghastly pictures. Someone can say, well, this guy tried to flee and we shot him down. End of story. But the story never ended. So that's why you seem suspect when people make presentations like that. Suicide by Cop. You know, I was on the edge of my seat waiting to see how this thing turned out. But there was no Suicide by Cop. We don't even know whether the guy even drove off. I would hope that our staff can and people who make video presentations can do better. And then we get back to the takedown with the body camera. That was ridiculous. It was so convenient that it was embarrassing. I was embarrassed by that because I thought I'd see something at last, what the body cameras actually do. Never did. The biggest view we have was the top of the suspect's head. Okay? That's not the way the body camera's supposed to function. You're supposed to see what other things other than the top of the suspect's head the officer encountered. As I pointed out, it's not the view of a cell phone held in your hand turning up, down, and around. It's not that view. And that's probably what the officer's point of view perspective, as they called it in the presentation. Wouldn't dare call it a point of view because it wasn't a point of view at all. It was a camera posted on a body plane, not a body camera.
Thank you, sir. We done?
The last speaker, final speaker card is Chris Hodgett.
Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Chief Beck. My name is Chris Hyduk. I have 22 years of experience as a Los Angeles police officer, over 150 commendations. I was officer of the quarter at Foothill Division, officer of the year at Southeast Division, and I was fired about a year ago. I want to talk about that. You may remember my case. It was on the news. A surveillance camera showed a Los Angeles police officer doing a takedown of a handcuffed woman for no apparent reason. That was me. That takedown stopped this suspect from biting me right here, as other officers have been. Your officer here has a picture of what that looks like. There is more evidence than I could possibly discuss even in a series of two-minute presentations, so I've posted it online. Right now, anyone can go to Facebook to the Officer Chris page and click on Photos and Albums. You can read the arrest report, see my interrogation by Internal Affairs, and perhaps most important, read the testimony of the supervisor who investigated my actions before they were on TV. During the investigation, a citizen called Internal Affairs and said, I know the suspect in that case, Michelle Jordan. She is a cop hater who comes at you like a train, and she previously drove over to a grown man's house and attacked him. This was the suspect's third time getting pulled over for using her cell phone in 3 months. I completely understand why someone might say, she's a handcuffed woman. What can she do? So I posted pictures of what I looked like after a previous arrest of a woman who had her arms pinned. Take a look. We had 5 officers trying to arrest that suspect. I did exactly what Chief Beck said to do. Don't hesitate to defend yourself. I didn't hesitate to defend myself, and I was fired. I would like to demonstrate what happened and narrate that entire view, entire video. Ideally, that would be for the Chief of Police or the Police Commission. Absent that, I'll talk to anyone who will listen. Thank you, sir.
We have one more public comment card, Mr. Prentice Jenkins.
Panel, I know you were hoping I didn't make it, but I did. I'm doing my civic duty as a juror. And I just want to say that last night was psychotic. The LAPD helicopters... the gay cops in the LAPD helicopter flew over my house. I stopped counting it 50 times in my place. That's what it sounds like. They know how to do it. I'm gonna rent a helicopter, a Huey helicopter. I'm gonna fly over every one of your houses 50 times. And I'm gonna vibrate your house. Let you see how it feels. They know what I'm talking about. You know when a cop starts acting like a child. Or a cop's in love. It doesn't matter that he's in love with a man. He's in love. And just like Bardo was in love with Rebecca Schaefer and shot her to death. That's the psychosis that you're dealing with in the helicopters. This man's got a problem, and this is a chief that I like, but he knows he's lost control of these guys. These guys suffer from post-traumatic stress, and it is horrible. And they're killing people. Some of these guys are just, they're on the edge. They're waiting to fire that gun. I'm not saying all of them are. I'm saying most of these guys are, yeah, you know, they're just doing their jobs. But then you got the crazy ones, the ones that are Columbine crazy. And trust me, just as I said before, one day a fireman is going to come in a fire station and just start gunning down the rest of them. It happened to you guys. One of your own came back 2 years later and shot two of you to death. So don't tell me it won't happen. None of you can say it won't happen because it came back on you. It's going to happen in the fire department. And I want to know, Chief, are you going to investigate your own? Yes or no? Will you investigate these people? Because I know what the investigation is going to be. We didn't find anything. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We are now on item number 10, closed session items. The Board of Police Commissioners will now recess into closed session to discuss item number 10A1, 10A2, 10A3, 10B, 10C, and 10D in accordance with Government Code 54957.